go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this 25th day of June, 2021. This is The Horn, headon.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go also if you'd like to participate in the Merry Wacky Zany real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific. And if you hop in right now, whether you've never been there before or whether you're an old hand, I mean, not an old hand, you know what I mean. But if you jump in right now, you'll be greeted by early arrivers Christopher and Christopher and... Dang it. Ah, okay. Christopher and Christopher and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky. And capably moderated by longtime inveterate indefatigable chat room moderator Sparky, who... although he's a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space into the more than 102-degree man cave this evening, and such is the wisdom of a third-stage guild navigator, indeed. Hi, I'm Robin. It's Friday on the Front Porch. If you'd like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, just go to headon.live and click on the button up at the top. It's real easy. It says click here with two check marks by it. And that'll carry you into the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable group that is the Horn chat room each and every Friday afternoon. New conversants are welcome, as are regulars far and wide. So come on by. The conversation is fine. Yeah. And, of course, every program at The Horn begins with gratitude. And that means that we send out thanks today to our 25th day of the month subscribers. And with that in mind, yes, thanks go out to Mark. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, different Mark. The fraternity of Marks is growing. Thank you both, Marks, and thank you as well. Thank you so very much for being partial sponsors of the program, as well as Peter. Thank you, Peter. Those are our three sponsors for the 25th day of the month, and we are very grateful as we are. And when I say we, I'm not talking about me and that mouse in my pocket. I'm talking about the entire community is grateful to everybody who helps to keep the program on the air. Thank you so very kindly indeed. So that leaves us with a $730 fundraising goal to finish the week, fully funded, so that we're not trying to dig out of a hole as of Monday. We'll start fresh for the last 3 days of the month. So, 730 to go, and it's now 725. Thanks to Jeremy jumping in early this evening. Thank you so much, Jeremy. And a note coming in from Charlene in Rogues Island. I'm offering up a $200 Chauvin Gets to Stay at the Gray Bar Hotel challenge. If that's not a challenge worth celebrating, I don't know what is. So there's a $200 challenge on the table, courtesy of Charlene in Rogues Island, a founding sister of the sorority of Leans. And Charlene notes, when it's met, I'll add $22.50, you know, for the 22 and a half years that Derek Chauvin is hopefully going to spend every minute of in prison. We will, I'm sure, be discussing that sentence later in the program, it's wonderful. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you so very much indeed. And that would go a long way. Well, goodness me, that would, if met, that would knock out $422.50 of the $725 remaining. So that would mean we'd be down to today. Everything would be funded up to today, and that would mean that we would also be on the verge of a bona fide, no kidding, horn Friday on the front porch, extraordinary, ordinary roundtable, community made miracle. Yes, indeed. So thank you, Charlene, and I hope folks will jump in on that lickety split, and we'll get that wiped out, and not wiped out, but get that met in short order. And I think we're going to have a great group in the conversation when we get started in a little less than an hour. Hey to Bernadette and hey to Tracy, both in the group this evening. And again, big thanks to Bernadette for keeping Agnes's pain threshold reduced with her magnificent salve. This stuff really works. The salve for what ails you. And Agnes uses a little bit every evening right before bedtime, and it seems to give her considerable relief. And this just in from Matt in San Francisco, a $25 challenge. Call it the Derek's Mom Read the Room Challenge, because there is news that that goes with the sentencing of Derek Chauvin that is it was truly bizarre. And suffice to say that the Derek's Mom Read the Room Challenge is tongue-in-cheek, to say the least, I believe, because, as Matt noted, Derek Chauvin's mom did not read the room. I mean, there's nothing to laugh about, but, I mean, my God, the tone deafness was just stunning. She didn't think the verdict was legitimate. And I've also got Derek Chauvin's brief statement, which is, what is it? Are they the words of a psychopath? Is that it? I mean, I want to be careful about using language like that, because he was stone cold sane when he murdered George Floyd, and no doubt about it. So that means that we are up to $225 in challenges, and if met, again, that'll get us up to $450, which gets us even closer to being done. And then add in Charlene's extra $22.50, so that would get us up to $472.50, and that would take us into the funding of this evening. So hopefully we will meet that promptly. And thank you. Thank you very kindly to George. Thank you, George, so very much. George just got us off to a rousing start, knocking out fully half of Charlene's challenge. Thank you, George. I cannot, on behalf of the Horn Family Community Congregation, thank you enough, and thank you as well. Thank you, Barbara, so very much. We are now, we've now only got $75 remaining of Charlene's Derek Chauvin gets to spend, hopefully, the rest of his days in the Gray Bar Hotel. Megan pointing out, all caps, Chauvin got life. Does this mean he now gets to be in Gen Pop in a federal penitentiary? Asking for a friend. One would assume so. And frankly, were I Derek Chauvin, I would not be looking forward to the idea of spending 22 and a half years in more or less solitary confinement. But it is still a light sentence. And thank you, Scott. Scott up in Wisconsin. Thank you, Scott, so very much. Charlene's challenge is met. I don't know if this has ever happened that fast. Charlene's Derek Chauvin gets to spend the rest of his life in the Gray Bar Hotel challenge has been met. And in fact, what Scott did is along the way is he also met Matt's, call it the Derek's Mom Read the Room Challenge. That's astonishing. So we are now into we've got a real fighting chance for a community made miracle that will a community made miracle that will see us fully funded for the week over the next couple of hours. And thank you so much, Barbara and Scott and George and Charlene and Jeremy. Thank you. That takes a tremendous amount of weight and stress off of keeping the program going. What's that? I've got another challenge for you. What? Tracy says, I got another challenge for you. $100 IKEA Amazon Tone Deaf Juneteenth challenge. All black people do not eat fried chicken. And that is the truth. Amazon, at one of their warehouses, by way of celebrating Juneteenth, in a warehouse that is staffed almost entirely by people of color, celebrated Juneteenth by catering in fried chicken. Oh dear me. Brother Deacon Asa says, is Derek Chauvin headed for a federal pound me in the ass prison? I'm asking for a software developer friend. Really? Yeah. The program is off the rails and into the gutter with only 11 minutes gone in the program. So there we go. And Ralphs, thank you. Woohoo! Says Ralphs for Charlene and Scott and George and Barbara and Jeremy. And thank you. Yes. I agree, Ralphs. I agree wholeheartedly. So early on, a lot of comment on the Chauvin sentencing. 22 and a half years, says Scott in San Diego. What does that work out to divided into 9 minutes and 24 seconds of death causing neck kneeling? Ooh, how would you even begin to... That's well beyond dividing big numbers into little numbers. I'm going to need somebody with some higher math skills for that, without a doubt. Fundraising is not over yet. If not, says Billable Rick, count me in for $30 to be applied to any existing challenge. So that means there's $70 left in the challenge that was put forward by Tracy. The IKEA Amazon Tone Deaf Juneteenth challenge, all black people do not eat fried chicken challenge. So there's $70 remaining in that, thanks to Billable Rick. Excellent, Horn family, says Charlene in Rogues Island. I second that with great enthusiasm, Charlene. Indeed. Oh, no worries, Tracy. No worries. Hell, the program's intro still says Bob. What are we going to do? Yeah, I know. But no, they didn't. I don't think so. Randy and PA says, but they forgot the waffles. No, I think there was waffles too. And their excuse was, well, we were trying to help a local minority run business and we thought it would be nice to, not on Juneteenth, please. I mean, nice little buffet, maybe some pasta salad, right? No. Yeah. Oh, dear. What is this? Stand by, please. Hey, y'all. Sorry, a phone call came in that I absolutely had to take, time zone differences being what they are. I have brought the Skype group on, and I asked Sparky to just get the conversation started. If you would please, Sparky, take it away.
Well, I wasn't ready for it, so it took me a minute.
I understand, but I didn't want a bunch of dead air.
Okay. Well, there's...
So anybody wants to jump in, jump in.
Are you going to go on phone call?
Yeah, I've got to take this.
Oh, okay. Go for it. Yeah, I got
everybody.
A story.
Hey, everybody.
I got a story for the second hour when everybody shows up.
Hi, everyone.
Hello. Hey, Sparky, did I make it in the room?
You are in, Bernadette. Oh,
awesome. Hi, Bernadette.
Hello, is that Chris?
Yes, yes.
How you doing, bud?
I'm doing wonderful. How about yourself?
I'm much better since I got some Sparky technical support and this whole Skype thing that, you know, I was ready to kill over. So, yeah, I'm good now.
This is easier than Discord. Come on.
Yes and no. It's my setup and my PTSD and, yeah, you know, when I could fix anybody else's shit when mine does go south, I'm just ready to take it out into the field and just shoot the shit. I'm over it.
Have you ever seen the movie Office Space?
Oh, yes. One of my favorites.
With the printer? Yeah.
Hey, yeah. Give me a sledgehammer or no. Heartbeat, yeah. Okay?
I got one of those right by the garage door.
Right?
That could fix anything.
Yeah, well, that 9 I got fixes it, too. Anyway, yeah, to 22 and a half years. I was thinking earlier, I got to spend 77 years with my dad, and this little girl, she won't have that. She won't have that.
No.
It's a start, but it ain't nowhere near justice. No.
You know, I'm not a mother. I just listened to Randy, right? Randy played the whole thing throughout her show. And, you know, obviously any mother is going to defend their child to the bitter end most of the time. Not all the time. Like the most hideous of the hideous. And he's up there, you know. Is he in the same categories of Ted Bundy or John Wayne Gacy? Maybe a rung below that. But, you know, you could. It's like, and she still professes his innocence. And
the mind-boggling part. Was she gave no forethought to the family that was sitting there that actually did lose somebody. She was only concerned with what she was going to lose. And I totally get that.
As a
mother, I get that.
Right.
It's
not something I would ever know.
I didn't hear any of the testimony or whatever because I was in town at CVS parked behind somebody that was getting a COVID test in the drive-up, and it took forever.
I'm sorry, Spark, because I know it's
hot
as hell over there.
I don't understand. She'd be like old cat by now, right?
Well, the two people that were in the car, neither one of them were wearing a mask. And I was going, what the hell's taking so long? And I keep hearing the gal talking through the speaker at her. And then they shoved the tray out. They put the kit in the tray and shove it out to the car, you know. And she had listened to all the instructions and then do
she
a test.
She had to shoot herself then?
Yes. No. Test. COVID test.
Oh, a test. I'm sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I was thinking the vaccination. Sorry. Okay.
No, you don't get vaccinated in the drive-up line. See,
okay. Yes. Okay, I got it.
They got two little cubicles in there for vaccination. So when you get the vaccination, you sit in that cube for 15 minutes before you leave.
Right.
Yeah, I think we ought to play along with Chris. Yeah, there's a guy with a little miniature elephant gun that stands off in the brush and shoots the needle into your arm for the vaccination. It's fun.
But anyway, the gal had to get out and then wipe down the top of the box you put them in, then open the lid, drop the thing in there, and then wipe it down again. And she looked totally confused. And I was just like, I can't believe neither one of them's got a mask on. If she's got COVID, he's got COVID. She only was the one on test.
Good point. Well, as long as I don't run into Sarah Palin giving me the shot, I'll be happy with that.
I'm so glad I'm done. I'm so glad I'm done with that.
I've got a question for Bernadette about No. This is a good question. For some time now, I've had on one of my legs a skin problem. Does the trees? What is it called? The trees. Is that good for troubles with the skin?
It depends on what your issue is.
Well, to be honest, I don't know. It's probably something that has come with age or something. But I've tried all kinds of ointments and, over-the-counter stuff. And it never has gone away. I've had it for years.
Scott, try it. You'll like it.
I tell you what, I have a sample size that, if you shoot me your address in an email, then I could ship you out a sample size and you could try it and see if it helps before you purchase it.
Okay. Well, I'll go to the website later and do that. I didn't realize you had that, but I'm glad I asked.
It's not a website. It's just the email address. So.
Okay. Yeah, but you do have a PayPal. Don't you have a PayPal site now?
I just have a PayPal account that I receive payments for.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Here, look, I'll just type it in. My email address.
Okay.
But it's real simple. It's priesttrees
at
ASIS.com.
All right. Well, I appreciate that. I'll follow up on that this evening.
Okay. Hey, I got a quick question for Roger. Roger, how's your peas doing? How tall are they now? Or your beans? Sorry.
Jeez, I don't know. Let me look. They're growing. Let's see, they're probably at about 10 feet. No, yeah, about 10 feet.
Yeah. Right on.
It's almost halfway to what you think they might get to?
They'll get to 20 and then flop over the top.
What kind of peas are these?
These are Scarlet Runner string beans.
Okay, and you have them growing up an arch or something like that?
Yeah, I used to grow them on the side of the barn, and they'd go. That was 22 feet, and then they'd flop out on the roof. And I did a seed-saving number of the tallest and aphid-resistant for over 30 years.
My goodness.
And anyhow, they get really tall, and now I don't have a barn to grow them up against, and et cetera. But I'm still planting them and still saving the seed.
There you go.
No, when it gets to be the full wall, I'll take a picture and post it.
I bet it's beautiful.
Oh, it is. It's amazing. His garden's amazing. Right. What do you need to do this weekend, Roger, to protect your crop?
Well, I'm just going to give him water.
That's all you can do, right? What else can you do?
No, my problem is tomorrow I'm supposed to be going taking my car to a car show. And it's supposed to be 100 and
fuck
something or other, but it's a car and airplane show, and so people fly in all their old airplanes, and so I'm just going to find a place to park my car real close to one of the planes that's parked there, and put my lawn chair underneath the wing of the airplane, and drink my iced tea and my beer.
Get yourself a cooler of that pub beer, Roger.
Get what?
Get yourself a cooler of the pub beer.
There you go.
Yeah, that would work, but I think I'll probably since I've got the Budweiser hanging around the house, I'll fill up two of my six-pack coolers. That ought to take care of me for the day.
Excellent.
I was just thinking about with Derek Chauvin, what they ought to do instead of putting him in the standard prison full of white racist prison guards that'll treat him like a hero, that they ought to find a prison that has complete with black prison guards and probably all black inmates, and then put him in Gen Pop, and it will have made it a life sentence.
He will never go into Gen Pop.
I know he'll be in segregated housing type thing, but my problem is that the prison guards, virtually all the prison guards I've ever met up with are racist assholes. And if those people are his only associations, which because segregated housing, that's it, he is going to be treated like a hero by racist prison guards.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe he can get young Arian Rittenhouse as his roommate.
Kyle Rittenhouse.
He won't be treated well. By prison guards, not a fucking chance.
Well, wait. He's not going to be treated great, okay? But the fact is the prison guards, generally speaking, are white racist assholes. And they might be pissed at him for giving cops a bad name and that kind of stuff. But he is not – he's not going to be treated as badly – as if it was a black cop who killed a white guy who then got put into segregated housing for his safety. The white guards would treat the black prisoner much worse than they're going to treat Derek Chauvin.
As a former prison guard, I do believe that they will turn a blind eye to him in most cases, meaning if he does something wrong to someone else, they may turn a blind eye to it, but that'll go both ways. If he is beaten up by people, there's a good chance, knowing what they know about him and what he's done to the profession in general, they will let it be. I'm not saying he'll be handled kid gloves. You're right. Some things he might get away with because of who he is. But for the most part, he's going to get what he's going to get, and nobody's going to give a shit.
Can speak
on this?
Cops who kill child molesters and scummy people don't last long in jail. It's unknown, but there's a code of ethics in jails. There is honor amongst thieves, and killers and child molesters do not last long. Because, especially child molesters, you can understand that. But killers, the honor in thieves is, yes, you can steal someone's shit, you can rob them blind, you can make them miserable, but taking away their life is something else. He took a life. He is going to get a fucking hell of a time in that prison. And I'm glad to see it's going to happen.
I hope you're right, Jeremy.
I would not be surprised if something like what happened to
him. I see an asshole either hanging himself because he can't deal with the stress or getting shanked. Okay?
Hey, Tracy, what were you going to say?
Can the black woman speak on this?
Absolutely, Tracy.
And as somebody who has been in jail. That part too. So we got a twofer here, y'all. So as far as, I mean, we all know, I mean, how this world works. And, you know, yes, Jeremy, he's probably, you know, he's not going to, you know, probably get any special treatment, blah, 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 from the guards. But what about the Aryan Brotherhood? You know, they're
the point stands on that.
Huh?
Your point stands on that. Yes, there will be certain groups that will give him cover, but it will that not part. Be everybody so by a long shot.
This is what I'm saying. He is going, and even if they cannot, the white guards who may not publicly, you know, give him kudos or what have you, there will be special favors, you know, because white people. White racist people. And, you know, because, again, these people, who I always say, you know, who act as though only, you know, that you're not a racist unless you're, you know, a card carrier member of the KKK and got your your wooden cross and your can of gasoline in the garage. That's another problem, because it's like, oh, they're not racist or anything like that, because, you know, you have this ideal or idea of what a racist looks like. No, no, that part. So, you know, there's probably guards that have never even, you know, people would have said, oh, he's not racist. Yeah, but y'all don't know what he's really thinking and how he really acts. So unless he is thrown in, and I know he won't get thrown into the general population, I'm thinking of, like somebody said about, you know, hanging himself. Myself personally, I'm looking at, you know, because see, I'm thinking of my brother in whatchamacallit. What was that movie? When they say, I'm going to get straight medieval on your ass. That part.
Pulp Fiction.
Thank you. Pulp Fiction. I'm channeling my inner Ving Rhames. Yeah. That my man, that Chauvin needs, somebody needs to get straight medieval on his ass. And I am not a violent person.
That motherfucker is going to be looking over his shoulder every fucking hour of the day.
He will not be able to breathe. As long as they don't put him with the Aryan Brotherhood, because see, that's going to give him cover. They're going to protect his ass.
He won't be put with them. NPC. They will watch him. They will make sure he stays away from General Pop, because he is a cop and he killed somebody. And I'm pretty sure that wherever the fuck he go, there's going to be somebody in there that recognize who the fuck he is and what the fuck they did, what he did to them. And then it's on and popping with his ass.
He may avoid Aryan Brotherhood just to make it look like he's doing a good job to get out early. That may be a motivation.
That's true.
And they will try to recruit him because they think he's one of them.
Because he is.
Well, I just want to get in on the toe tag betting pool, because you know that the jackpot's going to be big, big bucks. You know, because I don't think if they do take him out of general population, I just don't see how he's going to be able to stand it, because it's not. I don't envision him as a strong person. You see?
No, he's a pussy.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And, you know, you take the life that he used to have versus the life that he's facing for the next 22 and a half years. It's got toe tag written all over it, one way or another.
How long did Dahmer last before he got taken out in Gen Pop?
Well... Yeah.
If he's ever out in the yard, he's a marked man by several people. There will be people that are paid to take him out. His life will never be easy.
Okay.
Yes.
Because they can't watch him all the time.
Let me see. Yeah. Wherever he is, I know there's somebody that I have to know, somebody, and I will send them a shank kit, making kit, to take his ass out.
That's funny.
I mean, doesn't Amazon deliver everything?
Yeah. Hey.
To prisons? How many prisons are there in Minnesota?
I'm just kidding. I would never, like I said, as angry and exhausted as I am. You know, I'm just
tired people, okay?
I'm just sick and tired of being sick and tired, you know?
Yeah. And I'd be interested to see if Minnesota handles prisons like a lot of states. A lot of states, if you have a reasonable sentence, say between 2 and 5 years, you stay in your state. But if it's a long-term sentence, they ship you out usually to a private prison. That'll be fun in a private prison.
That part. I mean, where I am... You know, it's like right up there with, you know, all my white friends were texting me last week about Juneteenth. Well, how do you feel about Juneteenth? And I'm like, first of all, don't ask me this stuff because I get kind of exhausted when I get texted by my white friends about, like right now I got a whole bunch of texts. How do you feel about the verdict? It's like,
I didn't do that.
I know you didn't do it. I'm the one that sent you.
I know, but I'm just pointing out. I'm becoming less clueless.
Right. It's like you guys, and you know, with all, and I love y'all all people for checking on me and all that. But again, you know, I don't check on white folks when things happen to white people. I mean, unless it had, if it was, now if I was a, you know, if I was related to George Floyd or Breonna Taylor or any of, you know, numerous black people who have been, you know, killed, you know, sanctioned murder, then check on me because that person was a family member or what have you. But, you know, just because I'm black and yes, I have been affected horribly by this and it has laid me low. But don't text your black friends. Well, how do you feel about the verdict? If we want to talk about it, let us talk about it. If we want to bring it up, that's fine. But please, 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 please.
Tracy, I like the way you put that. I had a chuckle, but I had to mute my device. When things happen to black people, I mean, when things happen to white people, well, it's just not enough time in the day for me to be sending out crocheted things to them and cards and little smiley faces. It just, nothing ever happens to white people. First of all, you know, time would hang heavy on your hands, you know, but I get what you mean. And it's all right to be well-meaning and stuff, but you know, Tracy is not the spokeswoman for the
entire black race. I mean,
yeah.
As much as I love being the spokeswoman, you know, person for all black queer women everywhere.
But only on the horn.
Only on the horn. Yeah. Only on the horn am I the, you know, undisputed, you know, authority on blackness, on black queerness, on, you know, and everything black. You know, y'all, I am, y'all know I am unapologetically black. I do not give a, I'm going to get it put on this, on a t-shirt one day. I'm going to say I'm old enough and black enough not to give a fuck anymore. You know, I need that t-shirt. But
just, you're just that free.
I'm just that free. But it's, do you know how many decades it took me to get that free? I was just, a really wonderfully beautiful, amazing friend of mine's is finishing up her dissertation for her doctoral dissertation. And she interviewed me today about, you know, being black in college and, you know, dealing with, you know, how, you know, what it's like to be a black college student and stuff like that. And, you know, why, you know, how has racism affected my college journey? And I, you know, one of the things I said was, you know, I'm very blessed at this moment in my life that my major is Africana Studies and minoring in gender and women's studies, because there's a layer of protection there, especially within the Africana department, that I have never received in school. You know, the layer of protection, of encouragement, of, you know, celebrating what is amazingly, wonderfully and beautiful black and all that, that I'm allowed to be unapologetically black, that I do not have to pretend to be less than, you know. But on the, you know, conversely of my experience, you know, when I first went away to college and all the many, you know, all the different times I had been in and out of school and how I have been told or treated that, oh gosh, you're really smart for a black person.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you think a lot of that comes with the more mature age?
That too. And that was another thing that I brought up, because see, I will be 55 years old next month.
Yeah.
And so, like, one of the questions she asked was, if you had an issue, you know, a racial issue that came up, would you feel comfortable going to administration to complain about it? I said, 55, soon to be 55 year old Tracy would, no problem. But 20 year old Tracy, hell no. I would not. There's no way I would have been able to confront a teacher or administrator or anything and lodge a complaint or anything like that, because I did not have that kind of confidence. As a matter of fact, whenever there's a problem in my classes, the younger, you know, my younger classmates come to me to get advice on how to deal with these kind of things, because they're afraid of the repercussions. Me, again, old enough and black enough not to give a fuck, and will go after you if you come after me. I'm not afraid of repercussions because, see, I know how to defend myself. And I know, you know, y'all don't want to come for me because it won't be pretty. But when you know, like they talk about the tickling thing is, they talk about indoctrination. That's why we can't have critical race theory, because, you know, we'll hurt little Dick and Jane and all that. And they're so worried about the white kids' indoctrination. But I want to do something about my indoctrination that took place from the moment I left the womb as to what my place is as a black person in this country. How do we undo that indoctrination? Okay? How do we deal with that? How do we deal with the fact that because I'm a black girl, that I was basically told that I could not do math, that I could not do science or anything like that? And it wasn't because of anything. I mean, you know, you're talking about the intersectionality of my race and my gender. So what do we do to undo that? How do I unlearn what I've learned to learn again? So if you really want to talk about indoctrination, this whole fucking country has been indoctrinated.
Or just what it's really called is systemic racism that's built into the system. You could call it critical race theory or whatever, but it's there. Because, see, you're not the only one that's experienced that. And it's not ever going to leave you, Tracy. Because it's part of your DNA. It's part of who you are. It's part of what made you who you are.
Yes. This is what made me, you know, there's this thing about, you know, beauty for ashes. You know, I have, my life has been, yeah, that part.
I think you get to a point in life where you're tired of living up to somebody else's expectation. You accept the hell of who you are, and the world better deal with it as that. And it's that fucking simple. You deal with me as I am, or get the fuck out the way.
It's like, you know, like my grandmother used to say back in the day, you know, I have two speeds. If you don't like this one, you sure as fuck ain't going to like the other one. So I have, you know, if you don't like what I'm presenting to you, who I am, and this is me, calm and collected, Tracy, y'all don't want, you know, if y'all really don't want to see angry black woman, Tracy, and I will give you all of angry black woman, Tracy. You know, I will hold on to that. I will take on that mantle. But again, it's just, we need to do something. Huh?
Thrive. If given the chance to thrive, you'd be surprised what you're capable of doing. But when you're constantly told you can't. See, I got that shit too. And I was more determined than ever to make that statement untrue. You tell me I can't, oh, that's just going to make me do it even more.
You exactly.
Know? Yeah. You know, and I did not, you know, I did not have that, you know, I didn't have that resilience. It took me a long
time. I was fortunate because I was one of the younger kids in my family, and I got to watch what a lot of my sisters went through being older. And I think that did make me more determined, that if you tell me that I can't, I'm going to prove you wrong. I'm going to prove you wrong. It's going to make me do it.
And, you know, if I could just posit a thought, because Tracy asked a very incisive question a few moments ago. What do we do about the indoctrination that's taken place in the generations that are adults and older adults? And, you know, we can try to counter that. But I think an even bigger question or an even bigger issue is, hey, why don't we stop indoctrinating anybody about anything? Why don't we just teach facts? Because that's what we're talking about here. Facts. We're talking about suppressed facts. And we're talking about white fragility and white dainty snowflakiness. And you know what? When you start children out on the same footing and on a level playing field, indoctrination isn't necessary. Indoctrination is only necessary if you want to maintain a white supremacist way of being. And that's the bottom line to the whole objection to critical race theory, I think, tell me if I'm wrong, is that we're scared to death that somebody, you know, in particular, our children, might find out exactly how things are in this country. Let me jump in for a second, and because we got some hands raised in here wanting to, because this is all as I was just told on Twitter, Tracy, you know, Tracy has brought the fire today, and I think it's engendering a desire to enlarge the conversation. So we have a guest. I do not know who that is, but their hand is up. And so let's go to you. And your mic is on, so.
Hey, is this me?
I presume it is.
Gary.
Oh, Gary. Okay. Hey, Gary.
Scary Jerry.
Oh, Scary Jerry. Oh, my God. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, great to have you in the conversation, man. Have at it.
I hate the Skype. All kinds of things to actually hear it. And the Skype train is about a minute behind the actual broadcast, so it's kind of confusing. Anyway, I can't believe he got 22 years. Me being bipolar and spending over the course of my life maybe 18 days in the criminal system just for having the wrong color of skin, driving through late at night, blah, blah, blah. You know, there's a part of me that wants someone to beat him to death with a tray. There really is. But my little horn family, we can't receive along with this motherfucker. We can't. It's a natural human response for revenge. But any evil you put out in the universe comes back and gets you in some way. Sometimes it's proportionate. So I want him to have a long life in jail, 22.5 fucking years. I think that's enough. And I want him to come out and there'd be flying cars and he doesn't know what the fuck's going on. But I want him a long life. I want him healthy. I don't want any debilitating disease. I want every day to seem like a fucking year. And I'll leave it at that.
You know, Scary Jerry, you remind me of something. I forget where I saw it on the what social media platform or whatever. But, and I don't know if it's true either, because everything on the internet, surprisingly, not everything on the internet is true. But the account given was that in 1944, a young man won an essay contest, and the question in 1944 was, what should be done with Adolf Hitler once Germany loses? And his answer was one sentence long. His essay was one sentence long. Put him in black skin and let him live out the rest of his life in the United States of America.
That's Quantum Leap shit.
I want that to be true. And yet at the same time, you know, the acknowledgement of the grief and sadness that brought that person, if real, to make that statement cannot be unacknowledged. But I'm really glad you're in the room, Scary Jerry. It's great to have you part of the larger conversation. Let's maybe a little bit later we'll talk about anything you've seen in Surfside lately.
I gotta make a statement. This is hard.
Okay.
I've active listener. Carolyn passed April 23rd. I'm mostly hospital neglect, a little bit of cancer and COVID. And I've been naturally devastated. And I got to thank the Orange community for keeping me going the last 2 months. It was the only bit of normalcy that I've had. Even with the trans parts. In fact, no, Bob, you made me a fucking ally. I was arguing with my brother.
Well, I'll be damned.
Arguing with my brother just a month ago because we being Caribbean, Jamaican specifically, and, you know, Seventh-day Adventurers, we were really raised to be, to hate the rainbow. Let's just put it that way. And I was arguing with him. I said, wait a second. Jesus talked about this. And he's like, no, he didn't. I go, what is it? It's Matthew 19:17. And basically the line in the Bible is, some were born that way, some were made that way. It's okay. Nobody ever talks about that. We're all born with different challenges, and we have to resolve them in this life. For you, I think it's being trans. For me, it's being bipolar. The dark side of me wants to pick up a brick and beat, go find Chauvin and just pay him back for all the police abuse. The police are really, I don't think anybody in America realized, Tracy, chime in if you want, how nasty the police and the criminal justice system is in this country currently.
They have no fucking clue.
No, they don't. They don't understand what it is to drive down a road and have a cop swoop behind you and try to find anything, or have his hand on his gun the whole time, or have his hand on his, or have the gun. I remember one time, this is the best story ever. There was a little weed spot in Florida City. Florida City is a terrible place. It should be hit by hurricanes every fucking time. And I'm terrified of hurricanes. But I really believe, and I'm going to get biblical here for a second, sometimes when a hurricane hits, the people it's hitting deserve it. Not the people, it's just one of those biblical night of judgment things. You know, it's how you see like a tornado hit one trailer and leave everybody behind. And everybody, why that trailer? That guy was an asshole. Oh, okay. The point being, and I don't even know what the point was, I lost it. It was kind of funny. We can't think evil thoughts. Although it feels really natural and it whips up the dopamine. We got to be better people. We're the people that are going to fix racism. And us. Oh, that was my point. Trump pushed the racism button during his whole presidency. And it wasn't this bad before. It really, 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 really was. They just shot a cop here in Florida. I think it was in Orlando. During a traffic stop, and the cops are freaking out in Florida. And we got, Ron DeSantis, who I think is going to be president, which is terrifying. But Joe did have a 6% or, 6% growth rate. You keep that going, maybe not. I think Joe's doing a good job. I really do. I've never he may be the best yet. I mean, he stutters because I didn't know Joe's smart as fuck. I heard him talk yesterday. Damn, Joe's smart. But that's it. I'm putting my hand down. Carry on, show. Thanks for all being there, every single fucking one of you. Because
thank you, thank you, Jerry. And over on Twitter, you got a you got a note. Love to Scary Jerry.
Thank you so much.
You've just offered a stirring testimony to what this community can and often does. Relative to seeing to each other's well-being, and I'm so sorry for everything you've been through.
And it was terrible.
I can't even imagine.
It was, and then I had to deal with the terrible family. We had the cops at my house 47 hours later. Today is the first day I can talk about it without crying. How about that? Today. Thanks, family.
Thank you, Jerry, for being part of it. Thank you so much. Let's see. Scott's got his hand up. Go, Scott.
Sorry. I had the phone in my pocket, and I was doing something, listening. I've got I'll combine a TV viewing tip and an encouraging word for Tracy and the rest of the Horn family. This week on most PBS stations, there was a four 1-hour segments under the title Mysteries of Mental Illness. And I recorded them all and then binge watched them last night. And I'm telling you, and I've had, you know, several dances, you know, with the space between my ears over the years, but I learned a lot from it. And one of the things that I wasn't aware of that sort of sinks in was what Tracy was talking about, her experience in life as a woman, as a black woman, as a gay black woman. Edge science that on a genetic basis and on a brain chemistry basis, we carry traumas from our lineage, from our forebears, that plays out in the here and now. I mean, I guess I knew that on some level. You know, if your mom and dad were a little bit crazy, you're going to pick up some of that just on the basis of genetics. But I hadn't realized that there is a science that is trying to figure this out to assist us in not, you know, playing out, acting out our built-in genetic and brain issues. But if you go to the PBS website, I'm sure you can watch all four segments because they touch on everything. They touch on the history of defining mental issues. They touch on the history of what passed for treatment hundreds and hundreds of years ago. Barbarism, Jesus. And I don't mean haircutting academies. I mean being downright cruel and inhuman to people. The medicines that they tried, the chemical lobotomies, thorazine, that type of thing. But I mean, this, they cover all the fucking bases. Plus the one that we talk about here from time to time, when they Reagan, that motherfucker, budget cut all of the social mental programs. And the people who had issues were out on the streets, and the replacement for the mental houses and treatment centers was prison, and yep. The black people, the people of color in prison, who have, you know, it's not just they're juggling the ball of being black, and the history that entails, but the fact that the social issues and the brain issues and the genetic issues, and it's all wrapped up into one nasty fucking package. And the best we can do as society, so-called, is to lock them up. Just lock them up. That's their fucking answer to everything. So that's my TV viewing tip and my I guess, hopefully encouraging or right-on word to Tracy.
You know what, Scott? And this is that's a point that you bring up. And I have been sent Bob this book a long time. How long ago it was? Bob, I'm sorry, Robin.
That's okay.
I typically call you Robin, and I don't know. I guess because I'm on the stupid Skype thing. I'm like, Hugh. I sent that book, you know, Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome.
It just so happens that I keep it in the studio. I've got it in my hands right now.
One of the things, Dr. DeGruy, talks about is generational trauma. And this is one of the things that I talked about when I presented my paper at the conference, when during the Q&A session is part of the conference. And it's about, you know, we are still dealing with the trauma from being kidnapped and enslaved. Okay. I mean, think about this. Whenever there's a tragedy, a mass shooting or something, especially at a school, counselors and everything are brought to the school to help the kids deal with the trauma. And, you know, if they have to put up, extensive, however long they need for counseling or what have you and all that. But where was the counseling when we were no longer enslaved? Where was the counseling to deal with Jim Crow? Where was the counseling to deal with lynching? Where was the counseling to deal with the fact that no matter how qualified you are, you will not be able to get this job or get into this school or live in this neighborhood? Where is our counseling?
And
there isn't. And then couple that with not having somebody first of all, dealing with the fact that most, Black people have an issue with, the medical profession anyway because of, just throw something out, Tuskegee, or, forced sterilizations, or, just the myriad of things that have been done to Black people, under the guise of scientific exploration or what have you. So you have all that. So, but then if you finally say, okay, you know what, all that aside, I need help. What am I going to do? Where am I going to go? There's no access. And then when you finally get access, who are you going to be talking to? Are you going to be talking to a Barbie doll who, as much as she may want to help you, she has no idea what it feels like to be followed in a store or just to be afraid. Like Gary said, that what happens, the only thing that should happen if you get pulled over by the police is either I get a ticket or I don't. You have no way, shape, or form or fashion to understand what that feels like. And there's nobody teaching, what it's like for Black people for white people to understand what we go through. And then we don't even talk about the implicit bias that we all have, not just white people. Let me get that straight. We all have implicit bias. And so if you don't deal with that, you're going around thinking that, everybody's a kumbaya fucking ya, nothing's wrong. So all these things that we have to deal with, and then we have nobody to really talk to about this other than the church. And God bless the church, but how than ever, You got your pastor saying that you don't, you're not praying hard enough, Sister Porter. You don't need that medication. That's for white people. So we got all this stuff going on.
Jesus.
And then we got to just deal with, it's like, when I talk about, like the intersectionalities of being, my gender, my race, my mental wellness, the fact that I have dealt with the criminal injustice system and all of this. And yet and still, when, I've been told that I'm not entitled to my rage, that I am not entitled to my anger and my frustration and my pain, because you're telling me that I'm overreacting, that things are nowhere near as bad as you think they are. Tracy, calm down. Do some self-care. Have a bubble bath. Light some candles. Breathe.
Burn some sage.
Some sage. And nothing wrong with all that. I have done those things because I have the privilege of having access to those things. However, never, it don't work. because I need to talk. I, you know, like they were, I told Robin this, was that today? Yeah, today, when, you know, we're talking about critical race theory. And there was this white woman, and I have to find this clip. And she was amazing. She, you know, I think she was talking to a school board in her county or what have you. And she said, you know, I've had difficulty. And I was wondering where she was going with this. She's like, I've had difficulties all my life with mental illness or my mental wellness. And, you know, every time I've gone to therapy, one of the first things my therapist asks me is, tell me about you. Tell me about what's happened to you in your past. Tell me about your family. Tell me about the things that you don't even know or that you know, just let's talk and let's figure these things out, because there are things that is in your past or what have you that are troubling. And until you deal with those things, you know, all the good, the bad, and the ugly, until you deal with those things, you will not be able to heal. And so what she said, and this is why we need critical race theory. This is why we need, because see, in order to deal with the ugliness and the pain and everything that has, you know, has happened in this country, and not just to Black people, but to the indigenous people and to everybody that, you know, that does not fit into what the norm of what America is supposed to look and be like, the trauma that we have dealt with, we have to talk about it. Because if we don't talk about the ugliness of this country and the pain that has been inflicted upon people in this country, we will never heal. And it's not a blaming game. This is not about blame, y'all. It has nothing to do with blame. It just has a lot to do with the truth and to talk about why we are where we are today, because this country has never, ever, ever dealt with the fact that this is a white supremacist country. We never dealt with the traitors that started the Civil War. They're traitors. They should have been dealt with, but they never were. They were poo. That was, you know, that slap on the wrist, poo-poo is all okay. Since we've never dealt with that bullshit, we ain't never going to deal with anything until we get to the root, not the root. And I'm going back to my folk. The root of the root. Problem. The root. Okay.
Tracy, can I
am I wrong on that?
Well, just
no,
real
no,
quick.
Not at all.
Chris, real quick.
Go ahead.
It's that old dynamic, and it's as old as the universe. Denial is more than a river in Egypt. And this country has got massive, built-in, hardwired denial going on. You know? Well, I don't need to tell you.
Well,
you know?
I heard this thing. I mean, okay, so I know y'all have heard of Dave Chappelle. Who saw the skit when he had when he was doing Rick James?
Yeah, I think I remember. Yeah.
And so you throughout the thing when Rick James would come on camera and they, you know, cocaine is a powerful drug, right? So I heard this brother. His name is Dr. Rashad Ritchie, and I just found him by accident. Oh my God, he's my new hero. Throughout when we start talking about stupid white people and what they are, as I've been calling them, the melanin challenged. He's like, cognitive dissonance is a powerful drug.
The people of no color. That's what Malloy calls us.
Right.
I got a question. So Cancun Cruz and all those types of folks that are rallying on that, you know, the teaching real history is akin to bigotry on the other side, right? You know, all this horse shit, right? How do you possibly enlighten folks like that? And the other question I have is, what percentage of the country are they? I mean, this is the thing that dogged us after 2016, right? I was under the impression that maybe maggots 15%. 20%?
Up to 40.
40.
40? Okay. And anyway, Tracy, everything that you just said, is what's the barrier? What's the escape velocity for these fucking people to get them to understand what you're saying?
Well, see, there's some people who it will never penetrate.
Can I say something?
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Hi, Robin. This is Bernadette.
Hey, Bernadette.
How you doing? just listening to all this, I got a gazillion things running through my head right now. But if we talk about teaching history in this country, which the true history of this country has never been taught. None of us know it. I mean, how does somebody like John Berger?
Some of us know it.
Last year was the first time that he heard about the Tulsa race massacre, okay? When Trump made his little plan to go down there and do a rally, that's when he heard about the first time. And see, that's the root of the problem in this country is that we have not taught the history. And now that black people say, hey, let's step up and teach the real history of this country, white folks are like, well, no, we can't teach that because we've been teaching you got to hold on to your racist roots all your life. How do we do that?
I think white trans girl here. And I hope I'm not caring.
And I love you for that.
Thank you. I think a good place to start, and I'm not policing anybody's language, but I was taught, I mean, my God, it was 40 years ago almost that I was taught that there's no such thing as race. You know, they didn't teach it to me in a history class. They didn't teach it to me I learned it in anthropology. When my professor said, you can type people more accurately by the chemical composition of their earwax than you can by the color of their skin. Racism is a thing. Race isn't. I mean, I think it's more than appropriate to talk, check me if I'm wrong, I think it's more than appropriate to talk about ethnicities. But as long as we continue to, and maybe I'm wrong because it reminds me of something that a dear friend of mine who's indigenous said to me once, because I was privy to a conversation and somebody asked him, well, what do you prefer to be called? He said, I'm an Indian. He said, y'all been giving us so many names over the years, we're tired of being named, so we're just going to stick with the first one you gave us. And so, you know, if I object to the word race, maybe that's my privilege. I don't know.
No. You are, and like you said, race is a construct.
Yes.
The fluidity of race, because, you know, as quiet as it's kept, Italians, Giuliani,
but that's
Jews, Irish, all y'all, you know, y'all weren't considered white in the first place.
Yeah, you got to work your way into white.
You got to work your way into white.
Hey, I'm growing potatoes in my garden. My hair.
Jesus, Chris.
But you know what, Tracy? With that being said, a Jewish, an Irish, an Italian can work their way into construct of race. But a black person is never going to be able to do that.
Ever.
Okay, of the color of my skin and the melanin in my skin, I will never fucking be white. And this is what I call the Disney effect. We all grew up with the Disney stories and everything was supposed to be happily ever after. Well, no, the story of America is not happily ever after. And it ain't like the Disney story and you know, you kiss the frog and he turns into a prince and everything works out in the end. No.
And nobody's singing zippity doo-dah.
We don't teach our children. And so when they grow up with these Disney mentalities and the world treats them like the world is going to treat them, well, hey, no, you're not a princess. They're crushed and they're snowflakes now. Okay?
Right.
They melt.
And like you said, the only way a black person can, you know, ever become a, you know, quote unquote white person is because they can pass as a white person.
J. Edgar Hoover, white courtesy phone.
My mother passed. Okay? And yet I walk down the street in fear of walking with my grandkid who's blonde hair and blue eyed and looks like he belongs somewhere else. And I'm his mammy.
That
no,
part.
I'm not his mammy. I'm his Mimi, and that's my stink bug.
Or okay. Meemaw.
Okay.
Well, I, you know what, Bernadette, I had, you talking about, you know, the mistaken, you know, because my son, you know, like my grandma, my granddad and grandparents used to say was high, bright, and damn near white, light, bright, and damn near white. I am nursing him. I have the child attached to my breast. Now, remember, this, I'm 1988, so, and I'm in L.A. I'm not like I'm in, you know, this is not 1950s, you know, Mississippi or whatever, where they still have wet nurses. I'm sitting in the ladies' lounge at Nordstrom's in West L.A., and I'm nursing my son. And this old white woman looks at me, and with all seriousness, it's like, how does she say it? So who's his mother?
Oh, fuck's sake.
And I said, excuse, and see, this is those times in my life before I became who I am now, but I have snatches of moments of, I would definitely say, greatness of being Tracy. That, and so I sat there with my son attached to my breast, and I said, well, ask the wet nurse. And see, his mammy hired me because I have breast of the milk, and she wanted her baby to have breast of this milk, but because she didn't want to stretch her breasts out, she knew, because I had my five-year children, that I, you know, I would be able to nurse him.
Yours is already all stretched out. Holy shit.
And the woman looked at me and realized what a fucking idiot she was.
Look, I got a story for you. This happened this past June 15th. I'm in the grocery store. I'm at the deli with my grandson, and a woman walks up to me, and she's a little older than I am, and I'm young, okay? And she asked him, because I have on my Black Lives Matter mask, and I know that's the reason why she asked, does he know about Juneteenth? And she says to him, today's Juneteenth. And I turned that child around, and I said, excuse me, when's Juneteenth? He said, June 19th, Mimi. I said, okay, it's June 19th, ma'am. And she said, she took offense because at that moment, I called her wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I never said the word wrong. I'm wrong, huh? And I'm like, no, perhaps you just don't know the history.
Hey.
That's all.
How y'all doing?
Hey, Billable. Yep, your hand's up. Let's go to Billable for a sec.
Yeah. Since you just mentioned Juneteenth, I've got a friend who's Armenian. He's only been in the country maybe like 10 or 12 years. And he was like saying, you know, we just finished our golf game. He had, you know, we were drinking drinks, and he had a bunch of drink in his mouth. And he said, hey, you know, what's the deal with Juneteenth? What exactly is it? And I thought about it for a second and said, okay, it's the day when Texas told its Negroes that they were free. I mean, I thought that was fairly accurate. And, you know, some
say Negroes.
Yes, it celebrates the day when Texas told its Negroes that they were free.
You really use the word Negroes.
Well, yeah, because they basically kept the Emancipation Proclamation a secret to its.
Wait. What I'm saying is that word Negro. I mean, I'm not beating you up, Rick. No.
I was trying to be accurate, and you know.
No, I mean, I understand that in the context of what you were trying to say.
Right.
But it's like enslaved. You know.
Oh, I know that. But
when you're trying to tell our stories to other people, and right. Again, not beating you up, but when you use that word Negro, it is direct. I mean, and if anybody else in the room is Black, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's like, you know, there's certain words that we do not, because Negro is just, you know, I can't with that word.
It's not the word anymore.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find particularly fascinating about the history of that particular day in 1865 is that you know, the war was over. Lee had surrendered, but Jefferson Davis took it on the lam, trying to escape to Brazil. Flavio could offer more on that. But when the word came to Texas, it did not travel over land. It did not go via telegraph. Juneteenth is only Juneteenth because the United States Navy sailed into port on the Gulf Coast of Texas and proclaimed emancipation. So, you know, the state of Texas, still in rebellion at that point because the states had not yet been readmitted, didn't tell anybody anything. The United States military, arriving as an occupying force and damned well deserved, spread the word as a function of doing the bidding of the government of the United States. It blew, you know, when I read that, it blew my mind, you know, that it didn't come over land. It was still the solid South, and there weren't enough troops at that point in time. I mean, consider we're talking about the past the middle of June, and hostilities ceased in April, 2 months previous. You know, so that says something in its own right. I got a note. Let me keep up with a couple of things, Elizabeth. Thank you so much, Elizabeth. Elizabeth just jumped in. And so there's only $45 remaining on Tracy's Amazon and IKEA. Don't celebrate June 15th by giving fried chicken to black folks challenge. There's $45 remaining on that. Thank you, Tracy, by the way. And I have a note from Matt in San Francisco. How to help the true believer? Because the question was put forward, what about the people who can't be reached? I'd like to say they should move to San Francisco. Here they would see that what makes one different is a strength. What many deride as strange or unusual is where their beauty dwells. I'd like to think they could learn by being surrounded by all of us raging liberals. However, even here in liberal paradise, we have them in our midst. But they mostly remain quiet because they know they're outnumbered. The more of us that come out, no matter what our othering is, the more afraid the conservatives become. And this is so true. Deep down, they know they're on the wrong side of history. They just think if they yell loud enough, they can change the trajectory. As usual, they are mistaken. And I think Matt is entirely correct in that regard. I saw a meme earlier today or whatever, a graphic. And it showed people at a Klan rally, you know, fully hooded, robed, all that. And the caption said, January 6th insurrectionists losing their jobs, figuring out why their grannies and granddads wore hoods.
That's tremendous.
And it doesn't get much more true than that. By the way, Tracy Lee in New York said, I will not encourage Tracy to become Angry Black Tracy. But if I have to, my survival instinct will kick in, and I will reach for the mayonnaise.
The fucking mayonnaise, man. That is going to be, you guys, that is going to be on my tombstone.
Yeah, it is.
With the fucking mayonnaise.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I made it. And
mayonnaise. That'd be perfect. That'll fit perfectly.
I found a killer macaroni salad recipe the other day. And, sorry, there's mayonnaise involved, and it was most... I made those Rubbermaid containers that you buy at the dollar store, you know, and there's like one that's a gallon. I made a gallon. Mm-hmm. I made a gallon of macaroni salad.
Nice.
And there were a couple of tricks in there, and one of them was the liberal use of dill weed. I love dill.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Hold on. Who's all the time complaining of white people don't season their food?
I don't. Okay, I'm sorry, but I hate dill. I mean, I'm getting better with it. I made some tzatziki the other day, and you know you got to put dill in it. And I put enough in. You know, as long as I can put the dill in, then it's fine. But people get a little heavy-handed with the dill.
Well, I'm one of them heavy-handed people. But here's the funny thing. I got done, And among 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, that gallon of macaroni salad was gone before midnight.
Nice.
Before midnight. It's like, nah, don't bother cooking. Don't bother cooking. No, we'll just eat the macaroni salad. And that's how you know when you've scored.
Yes. You know, when you have scored, you know, when people say, yeah, you know what, I'm good. You don't have to cook shit. I'm, you know.
Yeah.
I love those days. I love those days when Jan says, well, baby, you know what? We don't need to cook. And I'm like, oh, thank you, Jesus.
Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Yes.
Thank you, Lord. I can't. But, you know, and Rick, I am sorry. If I interrupted your story, because it's that, you know, and I usually don't get hung up on words, but it's just when I think of the word Negro, I just think of my grandparents not being able, you know, Negro colored. I actually, it says on my birth certificate, it says Negro.
Mm-hmm.
On my birth certificate. And I was
born in 66. That's the word they used back in our day, Tracy. Yeah, no worries.
I was born in 1966, and it says Negro on my birth certificate.
Malcolm X used that word.
And yeah, see, you can, and it was freely used, and you can't just, but you can't just use the letter N, because as we recently found out, Agnes's DNA has more Neanderthal DNA in it than 84% of people who have sent their DNA off to be tested. So, you know, people could misinterpret that for Neanderthal if it was just an N.
Yeah. I mean, the point of the comment that I made to my friend, I mean, he basically spit his drink out. He thought it was so funny. I mean, he had no idea what Juneteenth was. I was trying to do a couple of things. Number one, criticize Texas and the Confederacy for basically keeping this a secret from its black population, and just trying to say exactly what it's about. I mean, I guess maybe it trivializes the holiday a bit, but I mean, it does. You know, it is the, you know, communication of finally that, hey, you're free. You know, the Emancipation Proclamation happened, what, 2.5 years earlier, something like that?
Right.
Yeah.
And they're finally being told in June of 65.
And know, consider what an information clampdown that was. I mean, like I said earlier, the telegraph ran to Texas.
Right.
But you
right.
could not get a telegram past the telegraph operator.
I mean, that would make the Soviets
make
very jealous.
Can I go ahead.
Please.
Because the whole thing about Juneteenth was it was black people who took on the ideal that this was the day we're liberated. Okay, this wasn't about the United States or Texas recognizing this. Juneteenth to black people is about the day that we're liberated, because 4th of July just don't get it for us.
Right.
Meanwhile, a couple of hundred miles to the east, you know, Vicksburg fell to the Union on July the 4th, 1863. And do you know it was more than 100 years before Vicksburg celebrated the 4th of July again?
There are several places throughout the South and throughout the Caribbean islands where black people were enslaved that Liberation Day is celebrated somewhere between Juneteenth and January 1st, you know, because of it moving through the states and through the Caribbean islands, Haiti and places like that, where the Haitian Revolution rose up during that same period of time and they claimed their liberation or 4th of July, but it wasn't 4th of July. Black people have never really felt comfortable celebrating the 4th of July because we never got our independence. So Juneteenth is our Independence Day. And you know, just by them making a holiday this particular year, after a year's worth of protests in the street about George Floyd and all the rest of that, because trust me, that's what brought this holiday on this year. Okay. It felt kind of like here, let's give them that so they'll be appeased. Fuck you with that bullshit.
Yeah, okay? You can miss me with that bullshit.
and you will never be able to celebrate. Look, Juneteenth this year being celebrated as a federal holiday only gave white people another day off. We was taking it off anyway. We've been taking it off for years.
Yeah, and you know what? It's going to get real galling in a couple of years when it's you know, come on down to the big mattress emporium for the Juneteenth mattress sale.
How do we fix the rest of them? That 40%, that 40% of America out there don't want it fixed. Thus, the insurrection on June 6th. That's what that shit is about. They're more than willing to celebrate their insurrection, their white supremacy, because that mindset is so engraved in them, and it too is generational, just like racism is generational for us here in America. It is for them too. They want America to fight again. Thus, the rise of Donald Trump and his presidency and the whole bit.
Did you say presidency?
I did say because
that's a fabulous. Wait a minute.
Bless your cowbell.
That's our first cowbell of the night, Bernadette.
Yeah.
God damn.
I appreciate that. I've been calling him a president for years.
Presidency. Lord.
Well, or how about presidency?
I heard of one today. I was, like I said, I ran on up on this brother, Dr. Richie, and my only issue is that he's on the Young Turks, but forget about that. Mm-hmm. But somebody said in the chat, the caucasity of it all. And I'm like, the caucasity of it all.
Literally, fuck Trump made it okay to allow for your racism to be worn on your sleeve. And, you know, for several years, I've saw white women in T-shirts that says, yeah, I'm racist, so what? You know, okay. Thank you for pointing that out. Now I know who the fuck you are.
Can I jump in with a quick observation?
Well, just let's stand by, Scott, because I think that's okay. Gary in front of you. Is that you, Gary? It's a guest.
Hello?
Yeah.
No, let Scott go. I want to hear what Scott has to say.
Okay.
It's real quick. Just to put it into a modern context, if the Emancipation Proclamation and the Juneteenth Proclamation were in modern-day form, like a TV commercial, there'd be fine print down the bottom of the screen at the end of the ad that says, you know, void where prohibited, conditions and terms may apply. Does that fit? I mean, am I on to something?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Because everything, redlining, redistricting, and every, even down to today, voter suppression, all that shit came afterwards.
Absolutely.
And not only that, let's not forget all those damn Confederate statues that they're whining about. That motherfucking, that shit didn't come out until years after the Civil War as a way to intimidate black people, y'all. So come on with it.
Yeah.
See, this is what happens when you learn. See, this is, and I put something, y'all, I put something in the chat. About, you know, the miseducation of white people. And it because, see, one of the things that Michael Harriet talks about, you know, why, you know, the pushback and all this, one of the reasons is because white people don't know their history either, okay? And so if you, okay, so take away critical race theory. Okay. So we won't call it critical race theory. Let's just talk about white people history and what they have done in this country. We won't even talk about enslavement or anything like that, but let's just talk about, you know, how they ran black people out of cities, how they kept black people from, you know, buying their homes or being even able to, you know, get loans or, you know, go to school, you know. So let's just teach white history. If you really, so we'll teach white history. Let's do that.
How about the axe handles in Jacksonville, Tracy?
Huh?
I never learned about the axe handle riot Jacksonville. I never got taught that.
Axe Handle Sunday. No.
There you go.
I mean, another massacre that happened, you know, where people, where black people were beaten in the street by white people with axe handles and baseball bats. Jacksonville, Florida, where another place where Trump was going to hold a rally. These places that he were going to hold rallies at were very, Stephen Miller picked him out. First of all, I know that for a fact. It has Stephen Miller written all over it. Okay. But if you don't know your history, then, and trust me, Trump knew this shit too. Okay. And that's why he okayed for the Tulsa rally, the Jacksonville rally in the, that.
Oh, and speaking of which, I wanted to mention something because, you know, yesterday, Sparky provided me with the audio of Mr. Meth Pillow. Was on Steve Bannon's program and declared that he was in charge of the inaugural parade for August.
Say what?
Yeah, these stupid bastards really do have treason and insurrection on their minds. And they're not done. And so I found this interesting as I was doing my prep this afternoon. Scott McFarlane tweeted, alert, because with the sentencing of Derek Chauvin, and then lo and behold, the announcement that the Trump Organization will probably be indicted by this time next week. Damn deal. It's not as big a deal as indicting the Trump part of the Trump organization, but anything that adds to their misery, you know, I hope it doesn't hurt too little.
It's getting close, though. Getting close.
They're drawing ever closer because I think eventually they'll, you know, Alan Weisselberg is going to turn. He's not going to, you know, because Trump really isn't the mafia. Omerta does not apply. But with that in mind, the upcoming indictment, a D.C. federal judge today, hearing one of the January 6th cases, said that a threat remains to the government of the United States. And in so saying, he said the following, the former president continues to speak out that the election was rigged or stolen. He also used the phrase, given the fact that the former president was part of the inspiration for January 6th, and then said, and he's still out there talking. Those are strong words from, you know, an Article III federal judge. And it's kind of a big deal. And then the other thing we haven't touched on, because everything's been so weighty, is the release of the UFO report.
Ooh.
Oh.
And maybe we want to save that for the people who work Art Bell's side of the street. But
that's okay. We can talk about that now.
it's a damned interesting because there's no answers in it, but they break it down into, and they say there's some stuff that we just can't explain, and we don't presently have the science to measure. And talking they're not trashing the people who saw these things because, you know, they're in many instances perfectly sane United States military pilots. Who are allowed to get behind the sticks of these incredibly expensive aircraft because of their stability. And so when those people say, holy shit, would you look at that? And they said that, they move at hypersonic speeds and in ways that we cannot, that simply defy our understandings of aerodynamics and propulsion. But they did not say that, you know, we're not alone. And the Russians, Russians and the Chinese claim to have experimented with hypersonic craft. And what better way to find out if it works than to fly it right over U.S. territory, and us not be able to do a damn thing about it.
Yeah, they don't just give away keys to flying guns.
The only territory over which UFOs have been recorded, though, Robin. I mean, it's a worldwide phenomenon.
Right, and it's so, you know, who knows? Maybe there's something coming. I don't know. But there, you know, there's and I want to go back to Scary Jerry because he had something to offer up.
Hear me?
Yeah, gotcha.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh. You know, when I came to this country, because I'm also an immigrant, I couldn't figure out why the resident black people were so angry. It was the weirdest thing. Tracy brought up it might have been Tracy, how England and Haiti, picked up sticks and said, get the fuck out, which is why Haitians have problems to this day, because they pissed off the white world. Funny how, you know, something that happened 150 years ago is still, you know, right here. But Haitians are coming up. Jamaicans, same thing. Jamaicans, there were some riots in Jamaica. Lots of English people died, and then it went back to the crown in England. I think it was 1820 or something like that. 1840, when they're like, you know, we're done with the slavery thing, we're out. So Caribbean folks have different perspectives. We have less genetic distress, but it's there. Hey, hell, if they pass out reparations, I'm not getting any. I wasn't here. But Rick, the proper term is the brothers or black people or the sisters. Integrate that into your vocab. You'll have a better life. I mean, shit, Bill Burr has a black wife now. Bill Burr started out racist as fuck. And he's totally transformed. We're here to transform. Get to the other side. There is another side. That's why you got fuckers standing up in the streets trying to take your money, selling heaven tickets. You were already headed to heaven. Evil spirits have to talk you out of it. That's how this works. Everybody's going to heaven. You don't have to buy a ticket. Be good to animals and people around you, and you're fine. That's it, in a nutshell. And Shabbat Shalom, by the way, for anybody who recognizes that. I had no idea Bernadette was a sister. I thought she was just in like Missouri or something, had a really tight accent. Oh, I have a viewing tip that the Horn family have to get on. I've been obsessed with Ozark lately. And what a show.
I can't wait to the new season.
I've been obsessed with it.
Really?
And I'm also starting to watch The Handmaid's Tale. That is hard to fucking watch.
That's hardcore shit.
So Jared, that is hard to watch. I can't watch that at night either, because I'll just sit here quietly going, oh shit, because we're headed that way.
What show is this? COVID
Bear. The Handmaid's Tale is what the 7-Day Adventure has been talking about. That's the 7-Day Adventure pitch, The Handmaid's Tale.
Absolutely.
And,
I just wanted to ask you, Napoleon, didn't he refer to the Haiti Revolt as the uppity rising?
I don't know. I don't track Napoleon. Really, I think he looked good in the suit. That was about it.
Well, you know, you guys do realize that Haiti is still paying reparations to France over the revolution.
Yeah,
right?
you would think that maybe France would wise up and say, "No, we're good," but no.
No. In fact, I think the earthquake they had was synthetic. How about that?
Mm-hmm. And also, the fact, you know, about that, the whole thing about history, how the Louisiana Purchase was basically so France could pay to quell the uprising.
Exactly. 3 cents an acre, y'all.
You know, see, these are the things that you learn in your 50s. I mean, I had to learn this shit in my fucking 50s. Okay? You know, because I didn't sure as fuck didn't get this shit in K-12, and I sure as fuck didn't get it, you know, in my, like I said, my 4-decade gap year before I finally finished.
I'm sorry, you can't just throw. You can't just throw four-decade gap year out there and expect not to get a cowbell for it. But, you know, the question was posed earlier about, you know, how do we go about teaching what has so thoroughly been untaught? And it reminds me of the brain breaking, you know, long night research and work that Dr. Bill O'Brien did years ago now. He got a grant from the U.S. Department of Education, and his goal was to teach history teachers how to teach history. And he said, and his approach was to say, look, this applies to kindergartners and 12th grade history professors. And it was kind of disheartening because, you know, we started out with like 60 people because they were getting, you know, the teachers were getting paid to be there. And I think we wound up with 13 because there was going to be actual work involved. Papers that had to be written.
Did you mention that you were shooting the video?
Yeah, I shot the video.
Yeah, did you mention that?
Well, I mean, not this time through, I didn't. But you know, I mean, I was there just eating it, just soaking it all in and eating it up and commenting alongside. But the thing is, what he was trying to get people to do was not regurgitate things, but rather to go and look to primary sources instead of somebody else's analysis. You know, instead of reading Rush Revere and the Midnight Ride or whatever by, you know, Rush Limbaugh, who, by the way, in case anybody was wondering, is still dead.
Still dead.
But the original words are available to us, and to take them and use them to teach children. I mean, Dr. Bill was so far ahead of conversations that most of America is just now having. And if what he was trying to put into practice had been put into practice, some of this conversation would be a hell of a lot easier to teach.
But when you have Republican legislatures now writing what can and cannot be in history books now, how are you going to get that out there? Because
I know,
you know, available to the kids in school is what they want them to learn, and that shit's been whitewashed.
Oh, it's yeah, absolutely, and it's also nothing new to the United States of America, Bernadette, because going back to the earliest days of the Republic, there were a bunch of, I guess, snowflakes. And they were, you know, come on, they weren't even thinking about black folks. They were concerned. And
let's stop for a second, because if you take the social structure of America right now, which is everybody for their own, there is no extended family anymore. You can't get a story from your grandmother. I don't have my grandparents anymore. I don't have my parents anymore, and I'm losing my older sister. So I'm desperately trying to find out my history of my family right now because I didn't get that as a kid. When I was a kid, my grandparents were already old as dirt and on their way out the door. Okay, so, and I didn't have an interest as a child to sit and listen to my elders, which is what is not taking place. But that is how black history has perpetuated itself because we weren't allowed to read and write books, okay? We weren't allowed.
Yeah, at best it was passed as oral traditions. What I was going to say though is you know, a bunch of very white, very wealthy politicians in the early days of the Republic actually tried to pass a law that would ban the importation of any book from Europe. Because it was deemed, you know, they were afraid that they were afraid it might smarten up the chumps.
Which is exactly what they continue to do in 2021 with this critical race theory.
Right, and you know, our memories are, I fear, somewhat foreshortened by the constant and persistent flow of outrage du jour. You know, have we forgotten what a hissy? I mean, who here remembers the phrase common core?
I hate that shit. I deal with it every fucking year. I've spent a year and a half teaching my grandson at home.
Can they raise my hand?
But they threw a fit over common core, the Republicans did. You know, you're going to teach people not to love America with that their common core. They're just changing the names. They're changing the words.
It's in the school right now, common core, and it's still being taught to this day.
That's what I wanted to say. If you want to piss off a black, maybe even more than the N word, ask them who their great 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 grandmother is.
Yeah.
No idea.
Well, see. The problem with the word Negro, I will tell you exactly what the problem with the word Negro is. That is the white man defining us black people. And black people have finally gotten to the point in history where we get to choose to define ourselves.
Precisely. Another thing that makes that word problematic is it is a perfectly ordinary, and especially with the N-word permutation, it's a perfectly ordinary Latin word that was press-ganged into the service of white supremacy and racism.
Yeah.
I mean, right. I can't tell you the amount of tittering that took place the first time we heard our Latin teacher in ninth grade tell us how in Latin N-I-G-E-R is pronounced. And we know how to pronounce Latin words because Cicero told us. And of course, the Roman Empire was about as multicolored and multicultural as an empire can be. I mean, people came from all over the empire. Mary Beard, and I know Chris in Germany will hear the podcast later, Mary Beard, the Oxford Don, who writes brilliantly and does wonderful ancient history presentations, but she raised the ire of lily-white Britain by saying that Great Britain, England, is not now and never has been a white nation. And for her, and you know, she doesn't just say things, she backs it up with evidence and points to the fact that when the coming of the Romans, there was a Celtic trade network of all manner of folks. And then when the Romans show up and they occupy in earnest for 300 years or so, soldiers come from all over the empire. They come from Syria. They come from Egypt. They come from North Africa. They come from Greece. They come from Nubia, and so it was anything but lily white. But they also had not invented yet the concept of racism. I mean, just a couple of examples. You've got a black Roman emperor, and he was black, and you've also got a trans woman Roman emperor, Elagabalus, who insisted that their subjects refer to her as my lady and not my lord. And so when you press gang a perfectly good Latin word, in this case the word for black, into the service of white supremacy, you know, it's doubling down on the nastiness of it. And the idea that there is an African country, I mean, whose idea was this? I mean, it's like having the United States just called Blanco. White. Well, there's an African, there's a nation in Africa that's just called Black. Mm-hmm. But we have to pronounce it Frenchly. Niger. Because you damn sure don't want to do the Latin pronunciation, because that'll get every Klansman in America just singing Lee Greenwood or something. Sorry.
Hey, Robin.
Soapbox. I'm off my soapbox. Okay, go ahead, Chris.
Hey, I had a question about, did you hear about Florida Kleagle Klansman DeSantis, his latest bill signing?
Oh, you mean about
did
the surveys?
You talk about that?
The surveys?
Yeah.
Yeah, I covered that last night.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Robin, are you telling us that the 300 wasn't a historical representation of Rome?
That was ancient Greece. But yeah, no.
I meant in terms of them being pure, the Spartans being pure white, and of course Xerxes being, you know, darker than dark.
Yeah, right. No. I so hate that movie. I hate it a bunch.
Tracy and Bernadette are spot on. We there was a full frontal assault on reality, truthfulness, history, real history, and it just like there's a full frontal assault on voting rights, you know.
Well, and they go hand in hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, and let me go to Billables had his hand up for eons. Oh. Billable, please.
Oh, yeah. I was going to respond to Scary Jerry. You know the show Ozark, if you're there, Scary. You know the character who plays Ruth, who I would describe as just a real kind of a firebrand. You know, she's a short lady, and I would lives in a trailer park. I mean, I would call her white trash. Okay, I'm sorry. Not to be pejorative, but I actually met her at my girlfriend's house, or somebody who was a doppelganger to her. And except Ruth had a lot more class than the lady that I met. But
well, you were in Orange County.
Well, yeah. I mean, Star had a roommate or a boarder, we'll call it, rented a room and a bathroom from hell. This guy didn't comply with any of the rules of the house. Like, he'd have people over all the time, even during COVID. Didn't think anything of it. We would smell acrid smoke coming out of his room. No smoking, supposedly. And I think he was both into meth and heroin. So
neither of which smells like either pot or tobacco, incidentally.
No, it definitely doesn't. But thank God, or thank the goddess, that he finally decided to abandon the premises, and he checked into a rehab facility. So, you know, peace be upon him. Hopefully he's, going to correct his life. But, boy, this guy was just, I mean, we had to, like, hide everything from him. He was like having a bear in the house. It's like he would go through an entire, like, a half gallon of half and half in one day. And he would fall asleep in the kitchen with his cereal, like, half poured, and, you know, fall asleep against the back gate. And, oh, I mean, you know, the guy was, he was a nice enough kid, but he, you know, he had his...
Wasn't from Appalachia, was he?
No, he wasn't. No, he's just...
Yay,
he's
getting some relief.
he's a German, not a Scots-Irish, Robin.
Oh, we got them, too. We got our Zickafooses here.
Right.
Just a couple of things since we've entered the third hour of the program. We're $35 from being done with Tracy's Amazon Don't Serve Fried Chicken on Juneteenth challenge. And that will put us within $100 of a, sure enough, Friday on the Front Porch, community-made miracle.
Hell, and let's not stop $100 short. Let's go for the full Monty, Robin. Come on.
Yeah, so, you know, call it $135 and we're done. And that leaves us just Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday to finish. To finish June, in proper order, let's say.
Hey, you might be $5 down from that, Ron.
Yes, I'm sorry, $130. Yeah, I saw that, Jeremy. My mistake. $130. Thank you, sure. thank you for letting me know, and thank you for doing that.
This point again, give what you can to Robin. Excellent show. Works her tail off. Very informative, on the right side of...
we could have a miracle. I feel it out there. Somebody is being moved in their heart right now. And they know the power of this station. This the power of Robin's voice coming through the airwaves. Go ahead, put your hand on the speaker, Pete.
Lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays. Yeah.
You can feel the knowledge and the intense debate coming through your hand, into your heart, into your mind. You can do this. You can give. Because y'all need to keep Robin's ass on the air.
And the rest of her, too.
Yeah, all of her. Everything. The whole nine yards, baby. Keep her voice in there because it's important, sweetie. It is, baby.
Your Jimmy voice, and James used to say, give a little and then give till it hurts and then double it.
Yeah, double that shit up. How far are we from a miracle?
$130.
$130. Come on, baby. We could do this. You hear us come on. You hear me. Every time I come on, I ask. And because it is a humbling experience for Robin to do so, and I know that. So the little that you give now makes so much of a difference. Liberal voices are hard to come by, baby. You know, there's very few. And when they come from the heart, baby, when they come from rural America, baby, that means something. It means it's not all red. No, no, baby. We have a voice out there, and we need to keep her on the – I'm sorry. I just got off the helicopter. I just flew from an undisclosed location from – where I can't tell you, right here to West Virginia to sit on the front porch with you.
Exactly, so. Exactly. And, you know, Jeremy noted, fundraising seems to have slowed to a crawl after a great start. Let's clean this up, family. Anything helps. Cents, dollars, whatever you can, give it all helps and all adds up. So true, so true. And yes. Thank you. Steve in New York observed something a moment ago and said, stop for a second and listen, Horn family. Listen to just how much wisdom and diversity we are hearing on Friday on the front porch tonight. And so much thanks to Bernadette and Tracy for bringing that. It's refreshing, and it's healthy, and it's helpful.
I'm enlightened every time I come on here, Robin. You were just now talking about the Roman Empire, and I'm sitting here sitting in awe of what does your Rolodex in your head look like? Because, hell, I don't have that ability to keep that information in my head. That is just, I'm just so impressed with your intelligence and the way you articulate it. We need your voice.
Thank you, John. You
know, I've been doing this for 5 years, and I still can't reach that level of passion that you put in it, the knowledge and the wisdom that you have. Baby, it's all good.
And thank you, Bernadette, for not being the only Black woman.
You are so welcome, honey.
I'm tearing up because it's been a heavy load.
I know.
Cross pollination, baby. We love it.
I knew you needed support.
Girl, I mean, how long have I been carrying this? I mean, Sandra was here, and we haven't heard from her in a minute. And then it was just me.
Sister Carol? Well, Sister Carol.
Yeah, but I mean, I
forgot about one.
You know, I mean.
Oh, so yeah, Lady B.
Lady B, but she doesn't come on to the show very often, you know, and so it's just like...
And Todd.
Oh, I'm talking women.
Women.
The Black women who carry the Democratic Party, as quiet as that shit is kept. Thank you, Stacey Abrams.
The one that saved this country.
That saved this fucking country, that part. But, y'all, so it's just the fact that, you know, it's just nice to not be the only black woman in on the call. It's just very, 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 very nice, you know. But
Tracy, mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead. Well, I had one.
It's just the when you know you only hear from you know white people and white men, especially when I first. You know, realized, you know, and became my authentic self as a queer Black woman, I was all excited, you know, I thought that, you know, under the rainbow flag, everybody was, it was beautiful, it was kumbaya, hand-holding and all that. And to go to, you know, to be excited to go to a, you know, queer affirming, actual gay church, I was like, yeah. But then to go in there and see, oh, man, it's still white men running the shit. And, you know, and marginalized there, too. And I'm like, God damn it. where do we get our voices? When do we get our to say our things? Hey, and by the way, so I don't know if this is going to happen. It might. I did an interview today with a friend of mine who's interviewing, you know, Black people, students that are currently in college about, you know, what it's like to be Black in school and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, I was talking about, you know, some of the reasons why I dropped out of school over the years and stuff like that. And the woman that was interviewing me said, you know, after she finishes her dissertation, she wants to work with me to do a TED Talk.
Whoa.
Ooh.
I've known one person who did a TED Talk, but that wasn't full on TED. That was TED Med. That's awesome. That's amazing, Tracy.
That is.
And I got big thank yous to send out to Bernadette and Brandon and Ralphs. With them jumping in, we're down to $85. We are $85 away from a community made Friday on the Front Porch bona fide, no kidding, genuine miracle.
Oh man.
Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and what did you say, $85?
Yeah.
I'm fine, y'all. I'm fine. I'm doing good. You know. Don't do that. You know.
Okay, I won't do that. I won't do that.
You know, it's gonna be easy. I'm just gonna throw another $42.50. 50, because you said 85, right?
Yeah. You cipher on the fly real good.
$42.50.
All right, so there we are.
Chauvin got, so that's fitting as well.
Hey, Tracy.
Yes, baby.
What is the name of that big book that all the psychiatrists use? They've used it for decades.
The DSM-5 at this point in time. Sorry, yeah, I jumped in on you, Tracy, but I was right there. Okay.
Well, the reason I ask, and this is why, especially Tracy, but the rest of all you all, I want you to watch that PBS show, Mysteries of Mental Illness, 4 parts. You can watch it over the weekend. There's something when they were talking about the first DSM and subsequent DSMs, there was a term in there for enslaved Black folks who wanted to be free.
Yeah.
In other words, in their minds and heart, and I forget what the word is, but I was gobsmacked when I heard that. That's how entrenched the groupthink is against people who just want to be their best selves and not have chains around their ankles and their wrists and their necks.
Right.
But there was a psychological term for wanting to be a free person of color. Jesus.
Right. Yeah, so, and then, you know, and here's the thing, like, you know, and now I'm going to draw my hey girl, hey, Robin, into the conversation. No, about, you know, how you're transitioning. Now, like I said, you know, I've only been, and, you know, I think it's the pejorative, but this is my wife, so remember who we're dealing with. We're dealing with a female version of Archie Bunker that I have been working on for the past 9 years.
Wow.
So with she's much better, y'all. Trust me. She called me when I first, you know, just became who I am, a dykeling. Okay. You know, or what does she call me? A dyke in training. And so, you know, so all these things, but, you know, and so, you know, as I became more part of the community and started to meet people, especially my trans sisters and brothers, I had no understanding or anything like that, you know, and I heard their stories and I empathized and I hurt for what they were going through. And then, you know, I've known Robin for over 10 years now. And so when she told me and trusted me when she was transitioning before she even announced it to the Horan family, I was I felt so blessed and privileged and honored because she trusted me with that information. But the thing is, I'm growing with her because I've never known anybody. Everybody that I've met that has transitioned or is transitioning, I didn't know them before, okay? I know her now. I've known her as before, and I know her now. And I have to say, and you know, anybody who is going through a journey, because Robin was there when I was going through mine, to know, to finally become who you are, and to know and to be privileged to be a part of this journey with her, because we've had these conversations about friendship and kinship and how there, you know, I don't really connect with a lot of women or men, or, you know, there's this part of me that's that gray area. But over the years, I was like, why do I connect so well with Robin? What is it about our friendship, even though we have never laid eyes on each other as far as being in the same physical space?
Working on that.
We are working on that. What is it about her and our friendship that has just become amazing? And I'm like, and it came to me, we've always been sisters. There was always this part of her, of our relationship, that's like, it's more than a friendship. There's something deeper. It's something, there's something underlying. And this is when you know that there's this psychic connection between people. So there's a sisterhood, you know, because women, we bond on a different level. And I have to say, for the first time in my entire, you know, cisgendered female, whatever we're going to be called this week, I actually have a sister that I truly connect with on the level of, you know, like I said, she's more girly than I'll ever be.
Sorry.
Right. And it's like, you know, the things that the diversity and the things that we are allowed to be on this show, in this family, that Robin finally felt safe enough to tell you guys who she really is. Do you know how amazing that is? What an entire blessing that is, and how fortunate we are to have this space in a world when I hear, you know, the mainstream liberal media one more time, I want to throw up and say, motherfuckers, where? Where is this mainstream liberal media that, you know, the QAnons and all these other fools are talking about? Because we don't have these spaces. We don't have these spaces where we can be free, where I can rant and Robin can be her and all this. So I'm saying this in all to say, y'all, I just put $42.50. Motherfuckers, come on and put the rest of the goddamn money.
It is met. With extreme prejudice,
that part,
and that goes to our buddy Arnold in PA. Thank you, Arnold. Thank you to Jude in the Great Northwest. Thank you so very much to Herbert. And we didn't just have a community made miracle. Herbert got us started on finishing June.
Oh,
so wow. We are. Now, officially, you know, if you count Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, that would be nine. We're at eight, and that is just wonderful. Thank you, Herbert. Thank you, everybody that has made this miracle possible, each and every one of you, because the end of the month is kind of weird and scary, because it's a health insurance premium. And you know, the cell phone that makes it possible to have the stress line and all of that. And I'm gonna lighten things up here in a minute with Sparky.
Robin, before you do,
hold on a second.
One thing, Tracy, I want to encourage you to always tell your story, honey, because that's how you heal. That's how you heal from the trauma that's generational. Okay, just tell your story. And your healing will come to you, okay?
That,
just keep telling you.
And that's exactly what my friend wants. That's, you know, because I was telling my story, and that's why she wants me to do a TED Talk. And she has, she has the connections to do so. So
good.
If y'all don't, who knows? Your girl might be doing a TED Talk.
Do it.
That'd be that would be fan freaking tastic.
Yeah.
And before I shift over into the lighter side of things, after what Tracy said, had a couple of people shoot me notes and say, "What's with the dead air? Where are you?" Early in the program when I caught Sparky unawares and started the group early. It was a very important phone call. And I had to, I kind of had to be away from the mic longer than I had planned because I had a little happy cry. Because I now have the first appointment in person a couple of months from now that will eventually lead to me getting my gender confirmation surgery.
Freaking standing.
Congratulations.
Robin. Outstanding, baby.
And it's like all of a sudden, whew, and it's going to be on
it's
the
that first step, baby.
Yes.
Mark the day, June 25th. Mark the day.
Just remember Agnes's gold rule, though. No sparkly tutus.
Nope. My inner 12-year-old is kept in a locked in a Barbie dream house in the basement, and she does not get out.
I love you, Robin. That's great, baby.
And the timing of it worked out so well. The goddess of irony is a good goddess, and she apparently knew that I've been kind of a mess for a couple of days because I looked at the calendar and I realized something. You know, whenever I hear stories of gun violence, you know, it means something to me because early on in my life, along with the other trauma that went with it, my family became victims of gun violence. And tomorrow will be the 50th anniversary of the day that the phone rang, and because I was a big kid, and I'd just gotten done with second grade. And I picked up the phone because I'd been taught how, and I said, "Hello," because that takes a lot of teaching. And the voice on the other end of the line said, "Is your daddy home?" And I said, no, he's at work." "Well, is your mama there?" And he identified himself. He is long since dead. He said, "My name is Sergeant Nykirk from the Atlanta, Georgia Police Department." And so I handed the phone to my mother. My dad was at the furnace. And 50 years ago tomorrow, their world changed forever. Because what Sergeant Nykirk of the Atlanta Police Department explained to my mother was that my brother's brains had been splattered all over a basement in Sandy Springs, Georgia. He was my stepbrother. At best, may not have even been my brother at all. And he had been brutalizing me for a couple of years in ways that I've told before and I don't care to go into now. But I looked up and I went, "Son of a gun. The 26th day of June will be 50 years. 50 years. And I was thinking about that when Bernadette and Tracy were talking about trauma. And, you know, I can remember it with Polaroid clarity. If I could paint, I could paint a picture of what the backyard looked like, of how warm the North Alabama sun was that day. And I can remember the accident that took place when we went to the police department in Atlanta, and, you know, there were no sitters, and my mom and dad both had to be there, and they couldn't leave a 7-year-old in the motel room in Marietta.
All right.
And so I saw the identification photograph. And that's burned into my brain, too.
Holy crap, that's horrible, Ron.
And it was my stepbrother. And his head was lolled over to the right side. And his brains were coming out.
It is.
And when I was cleaning out my father's effects after he passed away in 2007, in a briefcase in the back of the closet, I found the gun. That still had my brother's blood on it. And so, you know, and the horror of that is all tied up with the horror of what he did to me. And, you know, we talk about these things, and I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean, we all talk about these things, not by way of garnering sympathy, but by way of hopefully telling other people it's okay to talk about yours. It's okay to share that. It's okay to say it out loud because it's happened to other people. And it's the first step in healing. And in some ways, I started taking some of those first steps toward healing just a few months ago when I found the courage to be my authentic self. And so to have that phone call come through on this day, was in many ways, it felt like some sort of an affirmation. So now all I have to do is manage to keep making that insurance premium, and maybe before this year is out, I can achieve a fundamental level of completeness. And I'm absolutely blown away by it. And so that's what the dead air was. And I figured, you know, I'd go ahead and tell people. Tell this community, because this community talks to each, we talk to each other. And we share our triumphs and we share our tragedies. And this is a little bit of both. So I didn't mean to bring the conversation down. And I've been kind of saving Sparky's story for after some of all of this. So thank you for the patience of listening to what has been a fantastic Friday on the Front Porch, and what has been so intensely informative and enfolding in a sense of shared humanity. So thank you. And Sparky, take it away.
I don't know how I'm going to follow that, but I'm going to try.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of following. This is a complete gear shift. At least I hope it is.
Yeah, we're shifting into funny now.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to
love you, Robin.
Thank you, John.
I love you for your honesty and your courage, baby.
There might be a funny part you can laugh at. But John and Bernadette have heard part of this story.
I knew it.
From last night, because I was cross-pollinating over there on Blue Dots. So anyway, let me start from the beginning of the story.
In the beginning.
People probably don't know, but I retired as I'm a retired electrician. Everybody knows that. But when I retired, I became a professional caregiver to my mom and dad. And now I'm a caregiver to my wife. But anyway, yesterday, I was going to this CVS to drop off a prescription for her that was OxyContin, hydrocodone, whatever. It was a painkiller. So I thought, oh, geez. I turned around. I started walking out of the store, and I seen the ATM. I went, I'm going to get me some cash, and I'm going to go to Queen of Dragons and see what they got. Dragons. Because on the Blue Dot Show, John had received some gummies from Bernadette.
Hey.
I don't know nothing about that.
I don't know anything about it.
Somebody sent something to somebody.
Okay.
Let's assume that.
So I come back home just before the show started yesterday. I get on Queen of Dragons website and I start looking around at edibles, and I come across, my wife has always loved chocolate, because I bought some gummies before when I used to go in person to their store, and she looked at me and she goes, I don't know if I should take that and stuff. But she didn't know I was doing this. But if you scroll up in the picture, you'll see in the chat, you'll see a picture of a chill cannabis infused milk chocolate candy bar with little squares on it.
Yeah.
So that was part of my order. But I didn't think I was going
to get it. Part of your order?
Yes.
You're killing me. Go ahead.
But I didn't think I was going to get it till today. And then right after I got off with you guys yesterday on the Blue Dot, I get a text that says, this is Lisa from Queen of Dragons. I am on my way to you, and it will take me about 26 minutes to get there.
Freaking delivery. Are you shitting me?
Thank you so much.
I know.
For waiting. And I say, see you soon. So So my first thought was Lisa. Lisa, that's a name that can imply some stuff. It's a name, and you just start thinking about Lisa's.
Lisa.
And I think of this bit, this guy did. I think it was the guy that you, God, I can't think of his name. But he played a psychiatrist doctor, and he was interviewing a gal that had 7 different personalities, and she kept changing personalities, and Lisa was one that was more sexual, and she changed. And he always wanted to go back to Lisa. That's what came to my mind, that old bit. I watched it a long time ago. Well, anyway, I'm waiting. I'm looking out the window, and then I see a Kia SUV pull up in the driveway. So I go to the door, and I open the door, and I stand there. And Grady goes running out in front of me, check out who's coming to the house, because we don't get too many visitors. So the door opens, and out comes this Korean gal, with a big pink stripe in her hair, and she's really friendly and happy-go-lucky.
I guess she is.
She works at a pot store, Sparky. Really?
What's the mystery here?
And she meets people that are really happy to see her.
Yeah, so, they are.
So I give her the envelope and the money, and I printed out the invoice, and there's a little QR code or something on there, and supposed to show it to the person that's delivering. And I have my driver's license there too, so they can see it. Well, she takes the money, and we're talking there, and she's looking at my dog, and my dog's just sniffing at her all over the place. And then all of a sudden, she opens the door. Can I give your dog a treat?
What?
And I said, sure. Oh my God.
So she gets out this big bacon strip thing, hands it to Grady, and he spits it out on the ground and just keeps sniffing on her, because I don't know how many dogs she's got, but she's got dogs in all over.
Yeah, she's carrying dog treats. She's got a few dogs.
So I pick up the bacon strip, and I take it in the house, put it on Grady's bed, and someday he'll eat it, you know. So I open up the bag, and I know the bag's got that chocolate strip in it. So I put it in the refrigerator and let it cool down like breeze trees. You got to put it in the refrigerator after you get it out of the mail, or you'll open it up to a can of liquid.
Yeah.
Put it in the refrigerator, and then it turns into that salve, miracle salve.
Miracle shit.
And you put it on. So anyway, I waited a while, and then I pull the box out. It's in a cardboard that shows the cardboard box and then the bar. But the other picture I show has got a white box with that bag with the chocolate in it. The trick is opening the box. Talk about childproof, stonerproof,
sparky proof.
So I'm sitting there in the kitchen pushing. It's a push on the two sides and a push on the front, and it was supposed to pop open. I kept doing that for a few minutes. I slammed it down on the countertop, and I thought, man cave time.
So I power tools.
Don't use the cutting torch, Sparky. Don't use the cutting torch.
No, I have a tool that cuts plastic real good. It's one of those, you know, the vibrating thing that they cut casts off your arm with.
Yeah.
It's a tool like that. It's from the Harbor Freight. But anyway, I didn't use that. I call it a board vise on the table in the man cave.
You're having to put it in a vise?
Yeah, I put it in the vise.
Talk about childproof shit.
And I squeeze the damn thing, and then I get my circuit breaker screwdriver out of my job bag. A Klein is a narrow blade screwdriver, and I start prying on the cover. Little part of the latch.
Picture this in my mind.
A little piece on the front.
Sparky,
broke
why
off.
Didn't you use any Tannerite? Finally,
I get a little crack, and I put that screwdriver, and it just pops open. I spent so time messing around with it. By the time I got it open and was going to give a little square to Judy, it started melting already.
Oh,
it's melting in my fingers. So I give her the square, she ate them, and then I was licked the chocolate off my fingers. And
they need to start selling that stuff in M&M form.
Waited a while, see how she felt. I come back pretty soon, she was like smiling, and she's going, this is pretty good.
Oh, Lord.
And so
I assume you have tested this to make sure it's...
No, because I got some rainbow sherbet bud to put in my vape.
Ah.
And
I got some chocolate, I love vape, you know. Got
some loaded in there right now. All I have to do is turn it on, and I'm burning it at 385 degrees today.
Listen to this. Technology. They even have the technology, Robin. This bullshit. You know what I use? A Bic lighter.
Yeah, I know. Hey, have you seen that Bic lighter with the extended nozzle, yes. John? And the marketing for it shows a picture of Martha Stewart, and Martha's saying it's great for lighting candles. And there's a picture of Snoop, and he's going, "Yeah, and other stuff too."
Yeah. Now, why would they develop a product like that to meet the demand and the need? That's why.
I've got three of those.
I can't get over this shit.
Can I ask a question?
Well, I live in a sane state.
Yeah.
And then there's another dispensary opened in Redding.
Let me translate this from Texas. Kiss my ass.
This is an embarrassment of riches.
John, I have a
wait a minute. Let me tell you, there's a big old billboard on the side of the highway as you go into town that says High Times now open in Redding.
And somebody's gonna get popped for trademark infringement.
No, it's a chain.
Is it run by the people who print High Times?
I guess they licensed it. They have dispensaries all over the state.
Yeah, if you liked it as a magazine, you'll love it as a store. That's their motto, I think.
Wait a minute. Yeah.
Just go online and Google High Times Dispensary.
Wow.
Why would I want to torture myself anymore?
And,
all right, I'm done, John. I won't torture you anymore.
Jude just wrote in and said, Sparky, we in Washington State have learned how to open those boxes. Outside boxes, along with the secured items within. She said, this is a sweet story. It's a fun moment. Thank you, Jude.
I know how to open those boxes, too.
You got to smoke some of that sherbet in order to get in that box, boy.
There you go.
Well, I'm fixing to do it right now.
Well, brother, I'm joining you right now. So,
and I've got George on the line from California. Hey, George.
Hey, Robin. Hey, everybody. Just briefly, hey, Sparky, I got to drive 70 miles to Merced to get mine because I live in Madera County, and the authorities around here follow the Fresno County authorities and how to, they don't allow any dispensaries. So I envy you.
Yeah, you're in the county.
And as far as Breeze Trees, she's got to put a little key on that tin, like a shoe polish tin, because your adventure opening up that chocolate is almost as funny as me, because I have bad thumbs, and I couldn't get my thumbs to grip that little tin and made a big mess. So maybe you could look into getting some little new tins.
Okay.
Well,
the product's wonderful.
I'm not proud of it, but I had a disaster because we had about a third of a tin left, and Agnes said, "Would you put some on my neck?" And I said, "Sure, honey." And I went to open the tin, and I don't know if I jostled something, but something fell off the nightstand next to me, and the next thing I know, I have flung liquid Breeze Trees all over Agnes.
In the fridge.
Oh, well,
we usually keep it in the fridge, but this had been sitting out for an hour or so, a couple of hours, but there's a happy ending to the story, because Agnes said, "You know, I slept better that night than I have in ages."
I'm telling you. I am telling you. That stuff.
One of the reasons why I fretted on the scene so much last week in trying to get to the show was I wanted to let you know that you had a new tin coming. And what I want to do is take the time right now to thank you, Robin, and thank you, John, for just promoting this stuff. You guys have no idea when people order this and they write back to me and they tell me that it brings them some sort of relief. It really warms my heart to know that there's something that I do that is helping someone else. So when you guys say these things, it really moves my spirit. Okay.
Well, Bernadette, I went to the mailbox the other day and there it was. And I immediately picked up the phone, called home and said, "Good news," and told her what, and told Agnes what it was. And she said, "Oh, I'm so happy." And so it does. It brings great deals, great amounts of relief and relief.
It does indeed. And guess what? It helps like hell with the shingles. It does.
How is that going? Oh, hey, John, before we go there, I got a note from Tom in Sunny San Rafael.
Sunny San Rafael.
Yes. Tom says, "Let's build on the miracle." The miracle.
Let's build the miracle up.
And Tom says this may have been the best front porch ever. Here's a challenge for next week. Let's call it the Professor Tracy $100 challenge. And I'm so happy for your news, Tom says. It will be coming in the mailbox soon. So there's a $100 challenge to get us started on finishing June to the good. So
I got a challenge thing after me. Oh, my God. Thank
yes, you.
You
did. Wow. So thank you so much, Tom.
Wow.
Outstanding, Tom.
And by the way, thanks. I did go to the mailbox, and the same day that I picked that up, I also need to send out thanks to Dennis in Columbus and to Brandon and Fennell in Brooklyn. Thank you both so very, very much. And I always like to make sure that I get thank yous into the folks who use the U.S. Postal Service. So thank you.
Oh, I love getting mail.
Isn't it fun?
Don't you?
Yeah.
It is. When I got that, I got a twofer. I got two packages one day. And boy, what a combination that was. Of course, I received a nice package from Bernadette, another one from Nana Lovely, our, one of our Blue Dots up in Pennsylvania. And the combination of those two, oh, I slept like a baby. I really did.
Isn't it nice?
It is.
Because you've been in hell, John Bredevo.
I have. This shit's no fun. If you have not gotten the vaccine for the shingles, I'd recommend it very highly, baby, because this shit sucks. And it really does. It's quite painful. But hey, Robin, let me throw something out. I got good news.
Yeah?
We got a date, baby. I got a date.
You got a date?
November 13th, the weekend of November 13th. Mm-hmm. Our Blue Dot family is meeting in San Antonio. And right now we have some great interest from Blue Dots across the country. I'm talking from California to North Carolina, New York, Pennsylvania, Florida. This is going to be something, baby. I am so looking forward to it. It's a Blue Dot family meetup, and looks like November 13th is the date. I'm looking so forward to this stuff.
We're gonna and where? Show.
It's going to be in San Antonio, Texas.
Oh, wow.
On November 13th, and we are going to be there. We're going to be doing a couple shows live. We'll do a Beer and Bud Friday on Friday.
Ooh.
And then we'll do a Saturday show. It's going to be right there on the Riverwalk. You can probably go see the Alamo. And, you know, the Riverwalk in November, baby, that's, you know, they have it decorated for Christmas and the holiday season. And
oh, that's, man, just beautiful. I've seen pictures.
Oh, it's romantic as hell.
Hey, John?
John?
Yes.
Wait a minute. John, you got Travis to get it up on your website yet?
Not yet. We're just now in the solidifying the date stage. But I know people are already putting the process of getting tickets to fly. So
once it's solidified, put it on the website.
Yes, we're going to put it on the website and advertise it in the show and everything.
John?
Yes, Scott.
San Antonio. Now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't that where Pastor John Hager has his... scam going on?
I believe it is, brother.
I think.
Come on down there and get safe. Put your hand up there.
No. Well, wait a minute. This is even better. See if you can squeeze in a side trip to Pastor Aggie's congregation place, and when the collection plate comes around, drop a condom in the plate as it passes by.
There you go.
Get a group of people together.
Yeah,
rainbow condoms, if you got them.
Well, I always wanted to get within shouting distance, Pastor Hagee, so I could yell at him, "Starve!"
Hey, John, did Travis get a whack at your computer and see if you did do it last night?
He has not yet, but I'm on it right now. So if all of a sudden I go dead air, you know what happened? Yeah, we've had a little computer trouble going on with that tower, so we're trying to work it out.
John. How are you, John? How are you, Bob?
I'm doing fine.
This is Asgardian.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
Not too bad. I kind of fell into some video game rabbit holes, which is why I kind of disappeared for a while.
Well, I was thinking about you the other day.
Yeah, I've been getting sucked into some audiobooks, too. I'm listening to the Drist series from Ari Salvatore.
Is it good?
Oh, yeah. Drist is probably one of my favorite literary characters. And the Drist books are pretty much between the restructuring of Wizards of the Coast, I think they were at the time, and Gary Gygax licensing out to R.A. Salvatore, basically saved D&D in the early 80s from going bankrupt because of the Satanic Panic. So these books are actually set in that universe and follow one of my favorite characters in that universe. There's 35 of them at this point, I think, and each one is about 10 hours.
Man, that's something getting gross, Tim.
Hey, can I chime in here? Can anybody hear me?
Yes.
Hey, John, there's been an incredible cannabis invention in the last 6 months.
And oh, yeah?
It's in Texas, too. It's called Delta 8. Have you run across that yet?
The Delta 8 CBD?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually Delta 8 THC, but yeah.
Yeah. We got the Delta 8 CBD down here one time in bud form, and I kept looking at this going, Are you shitting me? This, what the fuck is the difference? Are you, you're just fucking, anyway, I did get to try it. Very nice.
They also, it's, they also have Delta 8 shatter, and the oil is pretty strong, and the gummies resolve just like regular, because of chemistry, they resolve like regular gummies. They will kick your ass.
Are you in Texas?
No, but oh. In terms of authentic self, I'm a cannabis guy. I wanted to go ahead and add something here to what Tracy and everybody was saying. The number one way right now, I think the thing we should jump up and down about is either decriminalization or legalization. Because as long as a cop can say, I smell weed, we have a problem.
Yeah, probable cause.
And this is just my personal opinion on the whole thing, but out of all of the things, of all of my time being an MP, the only thing I ever saw weed lead to was trying to turn everything into a bong. That is the worst thing I ever saw lead to.
I remember getting drunk and ending up in the back of the shore patrol. When I smoked a joint, I didn't get thrown in the back of the shore patrol wagon.
I have a military story. Do you know where, or have you heard of the naval base in Key West, right? Everybody's heard of it?
Sure.
It's actually a command center down there. They're very serious about things. In 2000 to 2001, literally, I was a bouncer at the only club the hottest club in Key West, and it was great. We had a lot of Navy and Coast Guard people come by, and they would always come in they were coming into what do they call that, confession, you know, the eyes going back and forth looking around, and I hope nobody sees me coming in here, and they'd get fucked up on everything, mostly alcohol,
sailors go
and what would happen is the Navy would just have a truck that would come by at 4:30 and just kind of throw them in and bring them back to the base. Ecstasy blew up. And all of a sudden, they're not drinking anymore and getting into trouble. An ecstasy, because I think that makes you a bad Navy person or something like that. And they just, they shut everything down. They're like, oh, hell no. It's okay to be a drunken fool, but if you're loving and hugging on people and just love, you know, and loving life, we don't want that. And it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. Alcohol's okay. Nothing else is. I have an interesting story. I live in Hollandale Beach. Hollandale Beach is attached to, it goes Hollandale Beach, Golden Beach, Sunny Isles, and then Bal Harbour, and then Surfside. The Surfside building was rich white people. I want to go ahead and inject that. Ron DeSantis has already sent FEMA money there. It was rich white people. There were dignitaries there. The First Lady of Paraguay, they can't find her. Yeah. This is a hot mess because those buildings on the beach, those are the strongest buildings in South Florida.
Yeah, but the beach was a lot farther away when they were built.
It's only 40 tall too, that building.
I think that's limestone water. I think that's what happened. They said it's sinking, or the water's coming. I guess nobody likes to say it that way. Key West is saying it that way. I'm going to go visit there a lot more while it's still there. And anyways, my point was, we got to go. If you want to make black people have a little smile on their face, because that the number one reason I live in Hollandale is because Hollandale made a press statement and said, you know what? The only two cities in Florida where weed is decriminalized are South Beach and Hollandale. That's it. Everywhere else, Miami, you're okay, but in Broward, they'll still kick your ass for some weed. They still will. So here's the point. This legalization thing, okay? That has to happen. Or at least decriminalization, or just, you know, make weed not a thing. That would go far. That would be almost like reparations, because most of black men's records are covered with weed offenses, myself included. Because that's the only way, as I told the judge, hey, this is the reason I don't shoot up the place, weed. And she was shocked. I go, it keeps me calm. She was shocked. She goes, well, then the state attorney says, you want to go on probation? I was like, I'm going to smoke a joint when I leave. And they just stared at me. and things change. The funny thing is the whole system, the whole legal system really counts on that $300 or $500 if you're somewhere else, or $1,000 if you're in Georgia, and then you get 12 months fucking probation for a joint. They really rely on that money. That has to be fixed. The legal system, the cops, the corrections, they all rely on the weed thing. That's why, I mean, shit,
Can I make a statement? I think it's, I want to say it's the 15th Amendment. And Robin, please correct me if I'm wrong. But, no, I'm sorry, it's the 13th Amendment. The 13th Amendment allows for modern day slavery.
Yeah, there shall be except in cases of conviction of crime.
Robin.
And that was the out, Bernadette. That was the out that they built into the 13th Amendment.
So if you're convicted of a crime, and let's get real serious about this, because one of the most inconsequential crimes is smoking a joint. But if you want to take away a person's right to do any fucking thing, convict them of a crime. Because once they're a felon, they can't do this, they can't do that, they can't do the other. Okay, that being said, this is how the black man ended up in, we have 2 million people in prison in America. A lot of them being drug-related crimes. That being marijuana. I live in Humboldt County. I have seen people's property get confiscated for weed. Okay? It's still going on now, even though it's legal. They will call them illegal grows, with air quotes, okay? So if you have an illegal grow, then yes, your shit can get confiscated, and you're fined millions of dollars a day until you correct that, whatever it is you're being fined for.
Sacramento wants the money.
Environmental, it could be a whole lot of things, and just having an illegal grow. Anything over 6 plants is an illegal grow if you don't have a permit. This is a way that the county makes money, the state makes money, the government makes money. The only person who ain't making money is the person who's growing weed. Okay?
Can I say something, please?
Please.
This is coming from my time as an MP, and this is part of the reason why I didn't become a police officer when I got out. One of the basic things you come to realize when you work with civilians as an MP, because MPs don't really do a lot of the stuff civilian police officers do in terms of like misdemeanor traffic stops. Basically, unless it's a safety violation, like it's a dangerous thing for you or someone else, we generally don't give tickets for it. And 9 times out of 10, if it's harmless, we won't drag you into the system for it. Civilian cops are incentivized to do that for the exact reason you stated. On top of that, it's another thing that probable cause, if you notice, almost every probable cause ruling in the United States legal code book start popping up immediately after the civil rights laws were passed. They're specifically designed as a means of giving the cops a reason to drag an African-American person out of their car and beat the fuck out of them. That's the entire reason why probable cause exists, and I say that as a police officer. Mm-hmm. It was invented in the 1960s in the South by the Jim Crow laws as an excuse for white police officers to literally just legally lynch black people.
And
then
you
can
stop you.
Probable cause was not invented in the 60s.
No,
but a lot of those things, like pulling you over and being able to search your car, those ruling documents, those ruling precedents were put in place under Jim Crow. Especially in the South. And then
it's reasonable suspicion, which is even a lower standard. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's probably what I was thinking of. It's reasonable suspicion in the South, whereas if you notice, a lot of northern states got rid of that doctrine after the 80s.
Not true.
No. They are different animals. They are different legal animals.
Believe me, we have it here in New York. I'm sorry to interrupt, by the way.
I appreciate the correction, Steve.
You're the lawyer here. I'm just talking about from what I've heard is the police side of things. Can I make a suggestion? MP law, the rules MPs follow are significantly different than civilians. So what I'm hearing is typically stuff that we had to deal with on the side as we're trying to unfuck our soldiers, because the civilian cops use the doctrine you just talked about, the what was it called?
Reasonable suspicion
thing. We literally had a soldier back when I was in the Army in 2007 get yanked out of his car because he refused to – he showed them his military ID instead of his civilian one. And they straight up beat the fuck out of him for being insubordinate and being difficult with the police officer. He showed up the next day looking like guy's ass beat by a street gang.
Oh, now you're talking about the crime of contempt of cop.
Basically.
You don't even have to be the one to piss him off. Somebody else could have pissed him off, and he's just looking for somebody to take it out of. Those kind of people, we have to wash out of our system.
Let me explain how it happens. It says something
that our commanding general, when I was there at Fort Stewart, basically put a carte blanche that no civilian police law enforcement, unless our base got invaded, was allowed to have any kind of firearm or deadly weapon, including nightsticks, on base. They had to turn them over at the front gate and put them in a lockbox. If they refused, they got taken back to their cruiser, put back in their cruiser, and told to go get a different officer that would comply with the rules.
Steve, can I explain the process? Yeah, jump in, Steve.
Okay. Here's what they do. First of all, reasonable suspicion is this silliness that allows a cop to stop you for basically any reason. Then if you're in a car, they'll start giving you shit, and this is when I smell weed, or do you mind if we search your car? And the fact of the matter is that 9 people out of 10 don't know that they can say to the cop, yeah, I do mind, and no, you can't. Most people think it's just that you have to say yes. And then they get in there and they search the car and, you know, find whatever they're going to find. And then, you know, you're just sitting there, and if you start to question, all of a sudden, disorderly conduct. And that's when you get the shit that you get. I mean, I've said in the past, I will not call the cops for any reason, ever. When I got assaulted in April, and I got my nose broken and my face beat, I did not call the cops. I don't want anything to do with them. I don't want them to touch me. I don't want them to be near me. I don't want them to, quote-unquote, help me. Period.
I called the cops when my family's getting harassed down here for reusing my voice. You know what they said? Oh, they're just good boys. They don't mean no harm. They're just blowing off a little steam, John.
Let's be honest. In the South, the cops aren't cops. The cops are the Klan's PR department.
I don't agree. I think they're just as bad in the North, and I think they're worse in New York City.
I'm only speaking from the South because that's the only experience I have. I haven't messed with the cops up here, and I try to avoid them, so I wasn't trying to generalize everyone. I'm just saying every cop I met in the South is basically a PR rep.
And that's why it's important for you to call everybody when you're listening to Robinson. There's a certain citizen responsibility I think we all have, and it doesn't mean you got to go out and just boom, bah, but take time to call your senator. Justice in Policing Act, the George Floyd Act. It's things like that only get done if there are enough voices screaming for it. If not, hey, lawmakers going to take the August recess and just kick back, collect a little more, loot from the people that support their ass, and we'll quiet down. It's when we don't quiet down that things happen, and there is demand for justice in this country.
Sustained outrage, John. Sustained outrage. Yes. And I had a note from Jack in Shreveport adding in to the discussion about the effects of, you know, bullshit pot arrests and the like. And he said, there's the consequences of no school loans, and there's totally reasonable suspicion crap all over the place. At least there was a few years ago. I couldn't imagine they've gone away. And I think reasonable suspicion goes for even possible misdemeanors. It doesn't even need an officer thinking there was a felony in progress. Plus, cops are trained to be really manipulative. They're totally trained to make you think they're on your side, and they appeal to your good nature and conscience. And the next thing you know, you're thicked.
It happens.
Yep. And so I want to take a moment to thank everybody who jumped in and helped out with the community made the Friday on the Front Porch community made miracle. The front porch will become the back porch as soon as this program isn't live, which will be in a matter of minutes. And I've got an announcement. I put this up on Twitter and Facebook too, but the reason yesterday's program didn't go up on Podbean is because I pay Podbean every month for what they call unlimited uploads. And lo and behold, I went to upload the program to Podbean last night. You have uploaded too much. Now, it's not like I'm doing, you know, I've even missed a couple of nights. But somehow or another, you know, and it's a sleazy ass shakedown. They want more money.
And with you need to pay us more money.
Yep, exactly. They don't know that there's not like extra money to pay out there. So that's everything the program will go up at the usual White Rose Society location, which is whiterosesociety.org/Kincaid with a capital K, KINCAID.html. And until July 1, that's where the podcast will be. So for everybody who's listening, please pass it around. I know the community talks to itself. Let folks know that Podbean is as useless as a screen door on a submarine until July 1 because they suck. And also something that is so beautifully applicable to the conversations that we've been having this evening in particular, but all our conversations. I had a note from Jude in the Great Northwest a little bit ago, and she said, "We are the soil for each other to grow and evolve in," and sent me a quote from the great, great Persian mystical poet Rumi. "Be grateful for whoever comes, because each has been sent as a guide from beyond. Friend, our closeness is this. Anywhere you put your foot, feel me in the firmness under you. Set your life on fire. Seek those who fan your flames."
There you go, buddy.
It's just exquisite, and it's so true. Oh, and another program note answering a question from Roger in Oregon. Could you update us on Dr. Bill? Dr. Bill is on hiatus, primarily because he has recently changed domiciles, and where he has gone has not very good internet. Dare I say bad internet.
And so getting
him connected into the program is a bit of a challenge. He did have a program this week, and unfortunately it was not recorded. The software didn't record. These things happen. But we'll be hearing from him on an ad hoc basis until, you know, we get some sort of stabilization in terms of his connectivity. And again, I cannot. No, he's doing well, Roger. He's doing well. Wow, that's odd. Ralph says, "For whatever reason, my White Rose Society podcast of the program stopped updating around June 4th of this year." You may just have to go and do it manually. There have been some issues with White Rose, but not nearly the issues that we have with frickin' Podbean. They're such a pain in the ass.
Well, they hit my bank account last night.
They don't have a problem hitting the bank account, that's for damn sure.
No, they hit me last night, I checked my balance, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And I went to go look, and it was the charge for our website.
Yeah, and your unlimited uploads. Yep, right.
Yeah, unlimited, yeah.
Uh-huh. And
try that out.
Yeah. But again, I want to thank everybody for the fantastic conversation this evening and for helping us finish the last full week of June in proper form. It is so, so important to the continued existence of this program. And we've got a challenge on the table courtesy of Tom in sunny San Rafael. It is the $100 Professor Tracy Challenge. Tom is matching every dollar up to 100 that comes in. And if that thing gets met over the weekend, then we will be started on Tuesday, and maybe, just maybe, somehow or another, we might have one day of fundraising free radio, which would be freaking awesome. I can't tell you how much I enjoy those. So thank you. Thank you again so very, very much. And thanks to everybody who participated this evening. And again, the back porch will continue after this program closes. Thanks to each and every one of you who keeps this program going with your kind subscriptions at PayPal and Patreon. We always need new subscribers because they fall away from time to time, and there's seldom a replacement. Thank you to Uncle Smokey. Thank you so much. Thanks as well to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to Charlene and Tracy for getting us going this evening, and everybody who responded. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to Sparky and the seat of honor around the Extraordinary Ordinary Round Table in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. And hey, Monday and Tuesday of this coming week, I'll be subbing for Malloy. And so you'll get a double dose of, you know, me. And I'm excited. I always love the chance to fill in for Mike. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And a note on that. In the last 24 hours, we have lost another of those who have put their life into the struggle for the future of Appalachia. A number of us worked closely with him over the years. He was associated with the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, Friends of the Mountains, other groups. Chuck Nelson passed away at 65, and he gave his life, his later life, to the struggle against mountaintop removal. He was an underground miner. He was a union miner. Then the union mine shut down, and he went to work for Massey. Massey screwed him over. And then he saw what was happening to his neighbors with the rise of mountaintop removal, and he became a tireless advocate for an end to mountaintop removal. And I've worked with him in D.C., and I've attended rallies and protests with him here in West Virginia. He was a good, good soul, and he will be sorely missed. And if there is an afterlife, I imagine that Larry Gibson and Judy Bonds are welcoming him even as we speak. And so, Godspeed, Chuck Nelson. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Do whatever you have to do to stay safe. If you haven't already gotten your vaccine, please get it. Use all of your precautions. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Take it with you everywhere. Wear a mask when you're around people who may not be vaccinated. And, you know, above all, if somebody comes towards you saying, "We don't need that critical race theory. It's dividing America," avoid that person like the plague, because they are. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.